We are the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma alongside my co-host, Danny Santarella. We got half the show out with the flu. It's like that line from my cousin Vinny. He wants to go buy a suit, and the whole store's got the flu. I thought this was going to be like Neil Lynch was going to just dominate the show, like take over the show.
Not on my watch.
And because, you know, he was, you know what happened? He was on like a hunger strike until they won, and it just lowered his immune system.
You want to know something, though?
What's that?
I brought donuts tonight.
You sure did.
And after Neil's comment today, his little Facebook attack on Santa Okay, after that whole the Vikings are purple because they choke all the time, if he was here right now, I wouldn't give him a donut.
No donut?
No donuts for Neil.
Hey, why don't we go out to our Hoboken studio and see if we can grab Neil. Neil, are you with us, Freddy?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's going on? It's good to hear you. I mean, was that the reason why you haven't joined us in a month and a half, because the Giants weren't winning, or was it just I know you had all these great excuses, but all of a sudden now you're battling through a flu bug to be on the show after they get a win. I like that out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've got dedication, I've got passion, and I'm never say die attitude, and I'm not going to quit on this season, and I'm not going to quit on this show. I'm here for the long run.
That's my main man. I like that. Well, we have a good show for you tonight. We got a couple big-time guests. We're going to get into some college basketball, which is, you know, near to dear in my heart, because in Connecticut we don't have any, you know, pro teams, but we got the UConn Huskies. So we got Tariq Turner calling in shortly. He's been a guest on the show before. He's great. He's got a new gig with Fox Sports 1. And we got John Shire, former Duke star, one of the better guards, college guards in America over the last decade or so. You know, he's great. And so he's now an assistant with Duke, so we're going to get a hold of him in a little bit. But, I mean, Neil, I know we discussed it a little bit last year, but, I mean, are you a college basketball guy? I mean, you follow Rutgers? Are you maybe one of the New York schools, Villanova? Where do you stand with college basketball? Are you a follower or just a casual get into it during the tournament time?
Yeah, I'm an observer. I'm an innocent bystander, watching all the bodies pile up. And then, I love all the hype that goes behind the top-ranked teams, because it's, you know, I'm more of a guy that's in it for the Cinderella story. So, you know, I kind of try and keep tabs on those types of teams heading down the stretch.
Yeah, but I mean, that's cool, though. I mean, so if nothing else is on, you might catch a regular season game if it's a big-time game, or not even that, or if it's out of the bar. I mean, you're not – we talked last week, Danny and I, about, you know, when I was in middle school, I would watch as much college basketball. It's probably my favorite sport during that, you know, the early 90s. I just couldn't get enough of it. Whoever was playing on ESPN, and back then ESPN didn't have a lot of other programming, so, like, they would cover a lot of college basketball, and I was just so into it. And now – you know, if a game's on, I'll try to watch as many UConn games as I can, but, and if a decent game is on, if it's a big Duke game, I might watch it. I'm very curious to watch some Kansas games this year to see this kid Wiggins. You know, always curious, Kentucky and Louisville and all that. But so you sound like the guy who wins every year in an NCAA bracket pool. He kind of doesn't watch. I like that team's name, and that's it.
I mean, every Saturday I tune into whatever the marquee game is there on CBS, but, you know, I mostly listen for the announcers and for, you know, the craziness that goes on in the stands, you know, hoping to see something ridiculous that I can tweet about. That's about it. I don't know that I have any marquee players that I could put the spotlight on, or any coaches that I think are going to turn their team around. I'm just in it for S's and giggles.
I mean, Dan is standing next to me just shaking his head. I think you lit a fire. I think up until today you guys had a strong working relationship. I think you burned that bridge, dude. He's angry with that comment. I mean, this Dan wants to break down – and wait till we interview John Shire. I'm like, well, you know, he's playing in Israel, this and that. This guy wants to break down splits on the offensive breakaways here for Duke. I mean, this guy is clearly passionate about it, Danny, right? I mean, you're excited about today's show. This is like
I'm very excited about today's show, and I'm equally disappointed in Neil. I'm on a lot of levels today, and, you know, the fact that he only watches the Saturday games, the fact that he takes shots at me on Facebook, the fact that I thought he and I were friends, that's all gone. I mean, it's all every bit
what
of that.
What a day. This is D-Day for you. He's,
you know what? I can't even say he's a good person anymore. I love him, but I'm a little sour on him.
We should just take one donut out of his box and smash it.
I'll drive it to Hoboken at 10 o'clock.
Smash it right out of his face.
We'll have a chit-chat.
I'll bring a bowl of soup over to make him feel better, and then just dump it on his lap.
But there's one thing that you should know about me is that I'm a classic WWF fan, and I turn heel very easily. So just when you think I'm in your corner, I'm 180, and I'm the bad guy. So I'll probably be a good guy next week. Who knows?
Yeah, well, you know what, though, Neil? I mean, you know, you show up on the show like once a month, but all anybody asks is, where's Neil been? Where's Neil? Where's Neil? And I'm over here breaking my back here trying to get this podcast off the ground, and nobody says, hey, Mike, good show. Hey, Mike, you did a great job on that interview. It's always, where's Neil been? Where's Tony B and his say what? I'm like, come on, you know, me and Neil, I'm over here rubbing two sticks together.
I know. Well, you know, it's distance makes the heart grow fonder, Mike. I think you got to go, like, you know, the Pat Summerall route and really let the action do the talking. Of course, there's no action going on, so that's going to be a little tough. I mean, you know, maybe throw a little silent meditation moment in there and let people stew about it.
That might be what has to happen. We need a little more dead air just for people to think about maybe and appreciate some of the things that I'm providing them, because nobody wants
exactly
to appreciate that. Everything is due. Even my father. It's, you know what, the show's not the same when there's not a due to you serious. My father misses the due to you serious segment. And we're like, Dad, I'm over here, you know, coming up with different segments and we're breaking things down.
My dad fast forwards through me talking. That's not even a joke. He listens to you guys. He's like, I know what you think about everything. I'm going to listen to my family.
Yeah.
We wonder why we're not blasting off. Our dads don't even listen.
We're trying to get ratings. If Neil's on the show, I can't even get to the Palma demographic to tune in. Oh, man. Well, you know, so you know, one of the things I'm curious to talk about, I mean, something, even as a casual basketball fan, you got to be a little interested in just the, you know, the falling apart of the Big East, and now it's split into two, and you still have the Big East with all the Catholic schools and Butler, and who's the other team out there?
Creighton.
Oh, and Creighton, right. And then you have the other teams broke off into the AAC. That's where you have UConn and Louisville and the rest. And, you know, Tariq is covering the Big East, but, you know, what are your feelings on that, Neil? I mean, it's got to be anyone who held any kind of disillusion that NCAA basketball had any sort of purity or anything dealing with the NCAA had any purity just shows that it's all just a money grab. And, you know, however long the tradition was of the Big East and the great Big East tournaments and the big, you know, big games of the 80s and 90s and all that, who cares? If there's money to be made, forget about all that, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan of how they kind of just threw that into the wind. But at the same time, you got to get kind of pumped about these Catholic schools banding together. I think that's going to be an interesting way that it plays out. You know, I mean, at what point you can't just revert back to what everyone's been expecting. And I think that, you know, at least for that one conference, that it could be something people tune into and get fired up about. Strictly for all the loose women.
Well, there is that. Now, most of these schools, too, are just basketball ones. They're not even football schools at all. Are they all? Do any of them have football?
But I don't think there's any D1, 1A, or FCS, whatever you want to call them, FBS teams in the whole league.
Yeah.
I don't think.
But it would be good. I mean, Providence is a team that, you know, had some good years when we were growing up in the 90s, and then fell apart times and then started to kind of, you know, look like a team again. So, we, you know, gain back their God, Sham God days.
Remember him?
Do we remember him?
Oh, God.
My goodness. So, we, you know, it'd be nice to see that. I think that the Big East is going to be kind of exciting. How long the AAC lasts like that, I don't know. You know, I'd be curious to see how that goes.
Well, everybody's leaving. You got Louisville's leaving next year. Connecticut doesn't know where they're going.
Yeah, right. So, but is it just a temporary conference and all together? I mean,
I don't know.
Is it going to try to stay together? I mean, we know that some of the schools are leaving for sure.
Yes.
But are they going to still piecemeal together with eight teams? Are they going to try to attract a couple teams? Or are they going to pull teams away from this little Big East that's going on? Who knows?
I don't know.
It's only going to get uglier.
It's very upsetting. I remember as a kid going down to the Garden for some Big East tournament, especially the first.
Did you ever go? Because it's one of the things I'm never going to get to see that.
Yeah, first day, my dad would take me to the Blarney Stone. We'd have like a pastrami.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We'd go down, you'd see like four games, five games, whatever it was. And it was the greatest. And they were all teams you knew.
Mm-hmm.
But that was before the days of 500 games a week on 400 channels.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest thing in the world. And I even wrote it in my article saying, I'm going to miss that.
Yeah.
And I'm a Kansas fan, and it was my second favorite tournament to watch. I loved it. And now it's. Oh.
Yeah, the tradition I had growing up, me and my buddy and his dad used to go see the preseason NIT at the Garden all the time. And that was the first time I saw Allen Iverson. We saw Stephon Marbury. there, and when Stephon Marbury was there, it was like a local kid, and he was a rookie, and I mean a freshman, and he was unbelievable. And Iverson, as a rookie, dropped 40 in one of those games as a freshman, and was just like, you know, it was amazing. We did the same thing with the Blarney Stone, you know, and I hang out, and my buddy's an Irish kid, and his father would sit there, and you know, get all excited for it, and that was through, you know, my early teammates from like age of 10 to like 14. We went every year. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you still have that type of thing. But, yeah, you missed the Big East tournament. I mean, that's like as exciting and like the best bang for your buck ticket that there'll ever be. There's never going to be something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I hated, and I'm going to be a hypocrite, but I hate realignment. But before last season when they were talking about Kansas possibly jumping to the Big East, I thought it was awesome. Just for the opportunity to see him play some local games at, like, Rutgers,
Saint John's,
whatever. So I hate it, but if it was my team moving to the Big East and I could, like, go up to stores and see them play. So I understand why some people are giddy, but really it's just the higher-ups that make all the money. And people like us suffer because you lose those, you know, mainstays like the Big East tournament or, you know, whatever. So just more money that they make and we lose out.
Well, while we're waiting for Tariq to join us, we might as well just jump into the elephant in the room, and that's your main man, Wiggins.
Wiggins!
Coming in. I mean, things are shaping up to be back-to-back first overall picks from Canada. Just the takeover is complete.
Yeah.
We're stealing their healthcare system, and now we're just stealing their basketball players. And so give me an idea. I mean, you, I'm sure, have studied this guy.
Mm-hmm.
My impression of him is obviously the hype, the Sports Illustrated articles, all of that. But you go to YouTube, and all I see is, you know, crazy acrobatic dunks, and you see him, you know, just dominating at the high school level. Now, I talked to you off-air a little bit, and you're like, he's more than that. He's got a little mid-range jump shot. So talk to me a little bit about this kid's game. Like, what makes him this kid? Now, how do we know? I mean, they say the same. This O.J. Mayo was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was in high school. Sebastian Telfair. There's been a million of those guys. So what makes this guy different?
Well, what you had mentioned offline, off-air, was the fact that you remind me a little bit of a Blake Griffin because of the highlight reel dunks and the, you know, flying through the air and all that stuff. What I said is it's a different body type. You have Griffin at like 6'10", 250, whatever he is. Wiggins is like a 6'8", 200, 2 and change, whatever. He's a little bit lanky, a little bit long. He's got the ability to put the ball on the floor. If you watch him in the McDonald's All-America game, he can handle the ball. He can shoot it. He can distribute.
Yeah.
And when you saw him in the blue-white game, the Kansas blue-white game, if you know, if anybody out there watched that.
I did not. Neil, did you catch the Kansas blue-white game?
I was all over that. I had the spread. I had the money line. I had everything going on.
He had everything.
He was putting the ball on the floor and going past arguably their best defender that size, Perry Ellis, going by him left and right. And Perry Ellis is a very good ball player all around. He was just going by him.
Yeah.
And so I think when you look at a guy like Perry Ellis and you go, he has the potential to be, according to himself and his staff, one of the better mid-range defenders in the league. And there's Wiggins at 18 years old going right by him.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just hype. And, of course, I'm a little biased.
But you know what? I liked it, though, because you're not you're a fan, but knowing you as a regular, just general sports fan, you're a pessimist.
Oh,
so that's why I was surprised that you were so excited about it, because I could see – I honestly, my thought was your opinion was going to be, you know, this is going to dominate every Kansas news story. Watch a Kansas game. That's all, and it is going to get annoying. All you're going to hear about every time they're on national television is about this kid. But you're all in on him, which I like. I'm surprised.
I am.
It's all new dance.
Yeah. Mr. Positive. Like, no, but I mean, when I, you know, what I really do think is people are going to make him the story, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He's the biggest recruit that they've had, you know, Matt McElmore last year, and they've had some huge recruits over the years. But to me, as just a Kansas fan who's all in on that program all the time, always focused on him, it comes down to Nadir Tharp at the point because he made some horrible decisions last year, and it comes down to the growing of Perry Ellis.
Yeah.
And it comes down to Jabari Traylor and all the other guys they have. Everybody's going to think about Wiggins. And if Wiggins isn't a 16 to 20-point a game scorer, I'd be stunned. I'd be stunned in the system that they run where they kind of highlight and accentuate the wingmen.
Yeah.
But I look at the other things. Everybody's making it about Wiggins, but I think true Kansas fans like myself that know what's going on, understand the game, you have to look at Deer Tharp, Perry Ellis, Jabari Traylor, and the come up into those young guys to try to build the way that Self likes to play.
Yeah.
But the whole storyline all year long is going to be Wiggins, and now with Marcus Smart's comments on OK State, it's going to be about the battle between those two as comparable small forwards. But to me, I just want to see how Tharp plays, how he replaces Elijah Johnson, how he handles the point, how he handles the pressure and the full court stuff that they get put against them. To me, that's what – I'm more interested in that than how Wiggins plays.
And but he's not their only piece that they got in this recruiting class, though, right? I mean, they had a very good recruiting class.
They had, I think, the third-ranked recruiting class in the country.
Yeah, which I remember. Yeah, I mean, so My question is, and maybe this is just another sign of ignorance, but, I mean, the ranks preseason ranks sixth in the coaches' poll. Does that seem a little low to you? You get the number one recruit, you have the third highest, and you're Kansas, who was a perennial contender every year. Like, are you a little surprised that you thought that's where they'd be? I mean, if this guy, we've seen a Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony come in and be able to take over a league and all that. So you don't think that that's a little low for them?
No, I saw you lose Macklemore, you lose Elijah Johnson, you lose Jeff Whitby, and there's so much to replace. And you have a kid, like I mentioned, the Deer Tharp, young point guard. It's going to be about his development. The point guard, they rely on him like most teams do, but Kansas even a little bit more so because of the kind of high-low system, the UCLA double-I post that they run. You need a point guard who knows where to get the ball. So to me, you have so many guys now that need to develop into, they were 6-point-a-game guys last year, now they need to be 12 or 14-point-a-game guys.
Yeah.
I think it's not surprising to me. I might have even thought they'd be ranked like 10th. So six, I mean, it makes no difference in basketball, as you know.
No, yeah,
like
of course.
Football,
yeah, of course
but
not. But
to me, no, I'm not surprised, and I think they'll have some growing pains. I think they might struggle with a more veteran team like OK State in the league. I know they play Duke next month.
Yeah.
They go to Florida. They play in Gainesville. So they're going to have some games where you find out before they get in Big 12 play where they are. But as far as their ranking, I'm not surprised.
It doesn't bother you. Not that it should bother you, like you said. College basketball, really, it's meaningless.
Yeah.
But I just was thinking, if it's a coach's poll and they see this kid who they all wanted, and what was weird, and I got just from mostly the Sports Illustrated article, but from some other articles I've read, that he refused to really talk to any coaches. He didn't want to talk to anything, and it was all just big hush-hush secret. And some teams didn't even go after him because they were like, we don't have a chance. And Kansas was almost in that mold where they thought he was going to go to Florida State because both of his parents went to Florida State, and they thought they had the inside track. Florida State did a big ceremony for his dad and his mom and all of that, and to try to recruit him, and they kind of just not snuck in the back door because they're Kansas. You're not going to be Kansas and sneak in the back door, but landed this kid under the cover of darkness, kind of, and nobody knew where he was going to go. What does that make? What do you take away from that? Just as a psyche of a kid, do you like that? Part of me likes it because a lot of these kids, you look at the college football announcement day and they put the hat on and they want the spotlight on them, and you kind of shied away from that. So I like that aspect of it, but I also think it's like it's almost disrespectful. You're not returning coaches' calls. These are coaches for Division I basketball programs. You know, returning their cold meal. Did you follow that story at all about how we got recruited and it just kind of wound up at Kansas?
No.
Would you like me to comment?
And that's why you're everybody's favorite. All right, so you come on it, Dan. I mean, what do you think? I mean, are you pro his way of handling it or kind of in the middle, or do you think that the way he handled it was kind of...
I'll be totally honest.
Yeah.
As long as he signed with Kansas, I don't care what he did. I mean that. And you know what people forget, seriously, and I know, again, I'm not overly objective, but people make Duke and UCLA and Michigan State, places like that, kind of the center of college basketball. But really, the mecca of college basketball, one of the oldest field houses, the home of basketball, James Naismith coached there, first coach.
Yeah.
Is Lawrence, Kansas. And people forget that sometimes. They look at it like, boy, they got a highly rated recruit.
Yeah.
And I'm never stunned.
Yeah.
I'm really not, dude, because it's a big-time place to play. And the Fog is maybe the coolest place next to maybe Cameron Indoor to play college basketball. It's awesome. So he goes against where his parents went, like you said, and playing in Tallahassee, and goes there. I have no problem. Imagine how many coaches called him.
Yeah,
300 something, or 400 Division II coaches. Probably
John Hopkins gave him a ring to take a shot at it.
So how's he supposed to get
back?
He
had a great medical program.
To everybody.
Yeah.
How's he going to get back to everybody?
Well, I agree with you. You could kind of have somebody just weed it out and say, here's my, get the word out. Here's my 15 teams. The thing I like about it, and I agree with you, and I'm glad you brought up the Kansas aspect of it, like people were shopping. And I hear like Colin Cowherd, who I have a love-hate relationship with him.
Right.
I had him in, ranked pretty high when I did my top 10 sports personalities to listen to, in the New York area. And one of the things he said is, like, he kind of smelled some foul with this whole recruiting process. Why would a kid who had anywhere to go, why would he choose Kansas? It's cold, it's dark, all this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, when you're playing college basketball, you don't have time. It's not like I understand if you're an NBA player and you're a free agent and you have time to go do all these things, or even if you're a college football player and it's like you got the spring and you want to go to USC because springtime at USC is fantastic and you got to be there a couple years anyway. But when you're looking at like a college basketball player, you get on campus, You're starting to practice. You go all through the winter. It's going to suck no matter where you are playing basketball. And then you know, when he's done playing basketball, it's just on to the NBA. What does he care where he is after
right.
that? I don't think he's getting his, you know, making sure he's getting 15 credits in that second semester.
Right.
You know what I mean? But we are going to be joined right now by a friend of the show. I think he might have been our first big-time guest we had. So I'm very happy to have him on. And you know, we're going to jump back over to some local stuff now. But he is now the Fox Sports 1 Big East basketball analyst and SNY studio analyst, the great Tariq Turner. Tariq, are you with us?
I'm here. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're on, man. I miss having you on. Well, just talk a little bit before we get into anything about your new gig at Fox Sports 1, a Big East network, Big East coverage there. Talk a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I'm really excited to be part of the Fox Sports team. As you know, Fox merged with the Big East Conference, the new Big East Conference, which features what some people refer to as the Catholic Seven, St. John's, Georgetown, Providence, Seton Hall, Villanova, who else? I'm blanking out, but there's a couple other teams, and then you add Xavier, Creighton, and Butler, along with Marquette, and you know, so there's 10 teams in the conference. Fox Sports now has the rights, the television rights to the Big East, so it's a big start for both Fox and the Big East. It's a partnership that a lot of people are excited about, and you know, the Big East keeps his name and is still in the Garden, the best arena in sports for basketball. And I'll be doing TV color for the Big East Conference, primarily the Northeast, Providence, Seton Hall, St. John's, and Providence, and Villanova.
All right, and you guys are there's a big kickoff event on Friday, right? Are you part of that, where they're going to have people on all 10 campuses?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually heading to L.A., in a few minutes, and I'll be doing a tip-off show with Bill Raftery on Friday evening from 9 to 11. So that's really the first opening show for Fox Sports and in the Big East, and it's a good way to kick things off. Real excited about it. Can't wait to get started.
All right. Now, my next question is, as a UConn fan, as you know, I mean, it's a little hard to see UConn not in the Big East, and you joined us – We were talking a little bit about the two conferences and what would happen with the AAC after Louisville leaves and what happens with them. But it's kind of cool. The Big East, the way it's constituted now, with 10 teams that have storied basketball programs and, you know, they're basketball-centric schools, which is cool. So talk a little bit about it. I mean, it must have been a little hard for you, having played at St. John's and been around the Big East your whole life, to see what happened to the Big East over the last 18 months or so. But, you know, the silver lining is what is left of the Big East is kind of cool for basketball fans.
Well, I think considering what's happened with all the realignment in college football being the big driver of that, as bad as things have been in terms of all the uncertainty and just doubt in terms of how this is going to play out, you mentioned UConn no longer as part of the Big East, Louisville not part of the Big East, Syracuse now in the ACC. There's been so much that's happened over the last year and a half that it's just good to have some closure. And I think for both UConn and my, you know, from being a St. John's alum, St. John's, just to know where you're headed, the Atlantic Athletic Conference is going to be a strong conference. They have strong teams. And the Big East has strong teams. I mean, you have a 10-team conference, a double round-robin format where everybody plays each other twice. National television on Fox Sports in the Garden. You know, personally, I would have liked to continue to have the ongoing relationship with UConn, where St. John's and all the other Big East teams could continue to play UConn. It definitely doesn't feel the same, but, you know, I kind of look past that now, and now I'm looking ahead. I think people are happy that college basketball is here, and for the Big East, the good thing is that it's all about hoops. There's no football. There's nothing else. It's all about basketball. And then that's what I'm excited about. And UConn's still going to be fine. I mean, they have one of the top backcourts in the country. They have one of the top young coaches in the country, Kevin Ollie. And, you know, they're going to continue to get top talent. So I think regardless where they are conference-wise, you're not going to see a drop-off from UConn.
Sharif, this is Dan Santarello here. I'm curious to find out what you think about the new bloods in the league, like Creighton and Butler. I know Brad Stevens, that's a great program there, back-to-back title games a couple of years ago. McDermott's a great coach.
Yep.
What do you think about those guys assimilating their way into the league and the style that a lot of those teams play?
I think it's exciting. I mean, you look at Creighton, you have an All-American caliber player in Doug McDermott who could have went to the NBA last year. He's coming in as a preseason pick as Big East Player of the Year. He's going to be an All-American. He's one of the most talented players in our college game. His dad, Greg McDermott, is a great coach. They did a great job in the Missouri Valley Conference, and they've proven that they can compete on a national level with, you know, top-tier teams. So I think they'll transition well. They're deep. They have a lot of experience. They have a six-year senior in Grant Gibbs, and they have some good guards as well. And, you know, then you look at Xavier, Chris Max, the head coach. They've always won, no matter where they are, wherever they play. They've moved around a little bit in terms of conferences the last couple of years, but they're familiar with the tournament. They're used to being in postseason. They have one of the top guards in the country in Samaje Christian, and they're deep. You know, they're 10-11 deep. So I think they're another team to watch. And then you have Butler and you know, Brandon Miller, who just inherited the job after Brad Stevens took the Celtics head job, former player, knows the landscape, an alumni at Butler. He's going to get those guys on the right track. They're a little young, but, you know, they're going to be, you know, a team that you have to take seriously because of the system they have in place, you know, disciplined basketball, well-coached, well-organized, and they're now on a national level. I mean, this program went to two Final Fours back-to-back, and that's unprecedented coming from a quote-unquote mid-major conference. So I think the three great additions, and also location-wise, we had three new markets for the Big East. Xavier is in Cincinnati, Butler in Indiana, and then Creighton in Nebraska. So, you know, it's three more markets that get a chance to tap into the Big East conference, and I think it's going to be great from a national landscape and from a local landscape in terms of New York City. When these programs come to the Garden, they'll have a good following with their fan base.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you 1,000% on the new teams. I think they're all exciting. I love the way they all play the game. You mentioned Doug McDermott, and, you know, I'm a kind of a basketball fanatic, so I've seen him play a lot. I love his post-up game. I love his face-up game. And I know maybe a lot of Big East fans might not be familiar with this guy, but he's my pick for Player of the Year. If it's not him, you know, who else would it be, do you think, in that league? And is he your pick, you know?
In the Big East, or you mean nationally?
Big East.
I mean, there's a few guys that stand out. I'd say Samaje Christian is a guy that not a lot of people know about because he's a new member to the Big East. Combo guard for Xavier, 6'3 power guard. Gets to the rim at will. He will be a pro at some point. He's only a sophomore with Atlantic 10 Player of the Year Atlantic 10 Rookie of the Year last year. He has a chance to make some noise. And, you know, I think, you know, looking at St. John's, you know, D'Angelo Harrison coming back with some controversy, certainly one of the top shooting guards in the conference, and as well as Jakar Sampson, the Big East Rookie of the Year. Those are two guys that are already kind of, you know, highly mentioned as preseason picks, first and second team, respectively. And, you know, looking across the league, and Markel Starks and Georgetown's another guy who stands out, point guard for the Hoyas. He's really their leader and, you know, returning leading scorer. I expect big things out of him. So I think you can look across the conference and, you know, there's at least four or five guys that stand out, but certainly McDermott is the top guy in most people's minds.
Yeah, I love him. And you know, curiously enough, I get behind Georgetown every year. I love John Thompson III. I love the system, the Princeton system with the great smart athletes he has and everything. What happens to them every year in the tournament where it's like they just can't get over that hump? What goes on with Georgetown when they get in the big dance?
Man, I wish I could tell you. I wish I had an answer for you with that. I mean, I was at Media Day last week, I believe it was. And I sat and then spoke with Coach Thompson and Markel Starks and Nate Lubick. And they are still that's still fresh in their mind, losing the Florida Gulf Coast, and rightfully so. I mean, no one really expected that, including myself. You know, I think it's a combination of just running into a hot team. And I think that's the beauty about the tournament. When you get there, it doesn't matter what your record is, how many games you won, what you ended up being ranked nationally. It's 0-0, and you're going up against another team who wants it just as much as you. And they ran into a team that got hot, and they had confidence. And when you get that combination of being hot and confident, it's hard. You know, it's hard to come back from a deficit. And so obviously, Otto Porter didn't have his best game, and that didn't help. But I look for big things for them this year, and I think you know, they're going to learn from that and put it behind them.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think we both know Kansas is going to win the national championship this year. But you mentioned
really?
Florida Gulf Coast. Who might
all
be
right.
that team? Maybe not a 15 seed, but a 12, 13, 14 seed this year that could get in the tournament and make a run, maybe to the Sweet 16, Elite 8, something along those lines. Is there anybody you have in mind?
I tell you what. I mean, they're not as much of a sleeper as they used to be. But TCU, Shaka Smart, I think, is one of the top coaches in the country. They're no longer a Cinderella team, but depending on who you ask, they're still not in a quote-unquote power conference, even though the Atlantic 10 is a great conference. They have a lot of talent this year. They have guards, they have wings, they have size in the middle. That's always a team that stands out to me that can make some noise, you know, come postseason, because Shaka Smart has that really unique ability to get guys ready and take it to another gear when it's ready, when it's time for March. And I think that's why you always got to consider him a factor.
Hey, Tariq, it's Mike again. I know you got a flight to catch. I'd be remiss if I didn't sneak in a couple UConn questions. Now, you're talking about coaching.
Of course.
I know you were a contemporary of Kevin Ollie. There was some overlap there, right? I think he was a little older than you,
yep.
But there's a little overlap there. So you know a lot about the guy, and I think he's surprised. I mean, UConn fan, I was a huge Kevin Ollie fan, but you never know how somebody's game is going to translate into being a coach. But what? Talk a little bit about the job he did last year, taking over for a legend amid some, you know, controversy. And he really did a pretty good job last year, and he's got UConn ready to have a pretty good season this year. Talk a little bit about Kevin Ollie. What do you see at him as a coach taking over for somebody like Jim Calhoun?
First of all, as you know, Mike, I'm a huge fan of Kevin Ollie, not even just as a coach, but as a person. You won't find a better person, a more quality, high-character coach in the country. And what he brings, Mike, is instant credibility, you know, learning from Coach Calhoun, coming up through the ranks, playing there 4 years as a point guard, and then playing in the NBA for 12 years, and not the traditional way. I mean, he was like the last guy making a team. He was on 10-day contracts on several different teams. So he knows what it's like to battle adversity and step up when things are going against him. And I think he uses that to relate to these guys. And, you know, imagine being Boatwright or Napier and being coached by Kevin Ollie. I mean, if I was them, I would be ecstatic, because here's a guy who's been through everything that you hopefully will get to at some point in terms of going to the NBA. And, you know, he's a master motivator, very good communicator. He's fair. And, you know, to win 20 games as a first-year coach and start to beat Michigan State as your home, as your season opener, I mean, I just think that's remarkable. And I think it's a sign of how good of a coach he's going to be, you know, going forward.
Yeah, and that's a good segue to my follow-up question, which is about Shabazz Napier. I mean, I've seen some analysts put him as in the top two or three point guards in the nation. And as a UConn fan, you know, I'm a little jaded. I watch him and the mistakes that he made, especially early on in his UConn career, stick in my head. You know, his little, you know, a little lax with the basketball, turnovers in crucial times. But you know he's got the talent there. I think, you know, learning under a guy like Kevin Ollie is huge for him. I mean, what do you make of Shabazz Napier? I mean, can he be one of the premier point guards in the nation this year? And, you know, what's the impact of Kevin Ollie going to have on him?
Well, I think he's definitely got better. If you look at what he did the last hold on 1 second, Mike. If you look at what he did the last 8 or 9 games, you could tell that he was starting to get it. And what I mean by that is knowing what's a good shot, what's a bad shot, picking the spots, controlling the tempo, and just playing under control. You could tell he was starting to catch on. I think for him to take it to the next level, he has to learn how to just continue to control his emotions and not let that take him out of the game. Because there's times when he'll go through spurts where he may not be as involved, he may not be scoring the ball. And when he's not scoring the ball, there's times when he kind of drifts, as opposed to still making himself, you know, present, whether it's making plays for others, playing defense, rebounding, getting steals. You know, there's a lot of things, ways he can impact the game, and I think that's the next step for him, finding ways to impact the game other than scoring the basketball. Everyone knows he can score, but the next step is just making everyone around him better, and I think he's him and Boatwright, you know, they play off of each other well. So I expect him to really embrace that leadership role this year.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, when things are going well for UConn, he looks like the premier point guard in the nation. But when things are going wrong, he presses and he's turning the ball over, he's taking bad shots, or like you said, he disappears altogether and it gets frustrating. Well, Tariq, I know you, you're a busy man. You got more jobs than Boomer Esiason, right? Every channel on the network, so I love you there. But I really appreciate your time. Good luck this year. We'll be watching you on both SNY and Fox Sports 1. So we really appreciate your time. All right, buddy?
Absolutely, Mike. And Dan, nice meeting you. And anytime you need me, give me a ring. You guys are great. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. That's Tariq Turner, and everybody could obviously check him out. I mean, he's one of the good guys. I mean, he's a guy, four-year guy at St. John's. I'm sure you know him, being a big basketball fan. And, you know, taking time out of his day, and he's got a lot of – he wears a lot of hats, man, but – he's passionate about basketball, which is cool. And, you know, it's one of the questions I want to have. You know, we're going to have John Shire on a little later on, and there's kind of two paths that guys take after their career ends. And, you know, he wasn't able to play in the pros or anything, but, you know, he took some time off and then, you know, got brought back into basketball. And there's two ways to go. It's either way to get into coaching or get into broadcasting. And, you know, he chose the path of broadcasting. He's very good. He's very knowledgeable and passionate about it. And if you've seen him on SNY, he's fantastic. During the games and during pregame and stuff. And so be curious to see, you know, why John Shire chose to choose his path. But, you know, good interview, though, good insight. And you like the fact that he agreed with you. I mean, you prepped him?
Look.
You shoot him a text? Hey.
When you know everything like I do,
you didn't even let him respond to the Kansas thing.
I know that. But here's the thing. Number one, nothing's ever going to top an early day. But that was second. That was right there with Tommy Dunn. That guy was awesome. Well, I hope he comes back on. Okay, that was great.
Yeah, I'd love to have mine, too.
Insightful and fun.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We'll get into some World Series stuff. I'm going to go, you know, we're going to start out with, because Tony's not here, and I'm running the show. We're going to get it right off the bat, Neil, for you. Little Ragnarok Rising. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be right back.
Yes.
Hello. Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.weebly.com.
Okay, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. Good show so far. Thank you again to Tariq Turner, friend of the show from the beginning. That was before we were landing our, you know, Ernie Banks interviews and our Tommy John interviews. We were able to get him. He came on several times, and that was during UConn's miracle run there. With Kemba Walker, and we got into it pretty good. So, you know, being a St. John's alum, he's got a good sense of humor, so he's good with it. So, yeah, it was good. So, Neil, ready to talk about some World Series baseball? I mean, I think the playoffs so far have been pretty great. You know, you haven't gotten a long series out of all these series, but you have some great games throughout. Obviously, the Red Sox series there, looking to go down 2-0 and having that comeback down 5-1 in the eighth in game two, was huge, really changed the momentum of the playoffs in general. Then they have the rally there after they're down 2-1 against Scherzer, and it's a must win because you don't want to go play Verlander in a game seven there. And so, you know, they're a great story. They've been a great story all along. The Cardinals, as much as I know you hate them.
Did they win?
I know you have to just appreciate the way they. I mean, they just the best run organization.
I can't disagree with it.
So Neil, I'll start out with this. I mean, What are your keys to look for here in this series? I mean, everybody raves about the bullpen of the Cardinals. I think their entire pitching staff, their depth, the fact that Shelby Miller is a long man here, they have that aspect to it. That's one that everybody's kind of pointing to. But what are some other keys to look at here in these World Series that you're looking at as a baseball fan?
Oh, I think each team can start with hitting the frickin' ball. I mean, you know, both of these teams had batting under 200, throughout their championship series. I mean, it's unheard of that they're both facing off in the World Series right now, considering the fact that they're just, you know, and they went up against some really great pitching, so I don't want to take that away from anyone, but I don't think that's ever really happened before, where you have two teams that just unable to hit the ball, at least in the first five or six innings against the starters, and then once the relievers come in, they tend to break out. It looks like the Sox are up 3-0 now in the first, so maybe they got the memo, but for me, it's really about, you know, what it's maintaining and being consistent with what got these teams here, right? It's playing fundamental baseball, not making the big mistakes, and when you have runners in scoring position, New York Mets, you take advantage of it. You know, you get, when a guy gets on base, he's at second or third, you get him over, move him over, and you score him. And I think that's what's gonna be the deciding factor in this. I don't think there's really going to be one player that stands out in this series. I think it's going to be a team effort across the board. I mean, we've pointed it out multiple times in the past. You know, whenever a big superstar comes along, it's not one guy carrying your team. It's just not possible. You've seen the formula for success over the past couple of years with the Giants, especially with the Cardinals. I mean, it's these teams, this team environment, the chemistry that these guys have, the bonding that they go through. And, you know, these two teams are the poster children for that. I mean, you look at the Beardos in Boston, you look at the Cardinals and what they're doing in the dugout. I mean, it's just guys who want to fight for each other and play for each other, and there's just everyone's on board.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times I think that the American League has the advantage year in and year out in the World Series because of the DH, because they have a guy who's been DHing all year long and they're spending a lot of money on. And whereas the National League, when it comes to playing the American League in their ballpark, they're just sticking a guy who's basically a role player, a bench guy. Like the Mets will stick, you know, Matt Franco back in the day at DH, where, you know, the opposing team's got a guy who's got 40 home runs and 130 RBIs. This is a little bit different because you've got Alan Craig coming back. Although he's had a 7-week layoff, we know the kind of production this guy could put up. I mean, he's one of the more unheralded hitters in the league, and you're able to just slot him in there. So it kind of negates that advantage, Danny. What do you think about that? I mean, do you agree with me that when you get into these interleague plays, I think one of the reasons why the American League teams and interleague games tend to be better is because when they're playing at a National League park, you know, they lose their DH, but they've got their other eight guys. When you're playing at an American League park, they have an all-star at DH, a lot of these good teams, and you've got some guy who's your fourth outfielder.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you 100%. I think the interesting thing about this particular series, as you alluded to, is, you know, you got Craig coming back, and he's going to be DHing, and the guy's an outstanding hitter. So, you know, they're going to put Adams out there at first base, who, you know, like you alluded to last week, he hits just 600-foot bombs. And
yeah,
just,
I mean, he just looks like a slow-pitch softball player.
He
look like any guy in Norwalk softball. He's got a flat brim, even.
Yeah.
He's got a big barrel chest.
It's great.
I mean, he looks like he's just cracking butt heavies after the game.
Yeah, I mean, to me, just to the point earlier of what the key is to me is, and I'm a fan of his, even though I don't care for the team. But Yadier Molina, because of everything he does.
It's your MVP.
No, my MVP. He would get my vote if I had one. He controls that pitching staff. They're obviously talented, but he seems to make all the right calls. He throws out whatever percent, 50% of the runners, whatever the hell he throws.
Yeah,
I mean, he's unbelievable. Boston's a team that's a successful base-stealing team. Can he control them? And I think on the other side, there's a lot of storylines, but I look at it and say, you know, can they control Big Poppy?
Yeah.
Because he's such a lethal run producer in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Can they control him? Because, you know, you had Pedroia and Ellsbury and Victorino with some of their struggles that they had, but they still just find ways to win. Both teams do.
Yeah.
So I look at the little things like, you know, Molina just controlling them, keeping guys at first instead of letting them get in scoring position by stealing a bag, because the pitching staffs are both great. So I look at a storyline like that, and then Poppy, what can he do?
Yeah.
Is he going to continue to produce like he always does? And, of course, you have Beltran, and he's a fantastic postseason player.
Two of the all-time great players, which is awesome. But I agree with you as far as, like, little things and whether Molina can negate them. I mean, watching this game, and I'm a nerd when it comes to the little nuances of baseball, one of the things I'm, like, really into is base running. looking at a guy's one-out lead from third base, a two-out lead looking for a ball in the dirt, and reading balls in the dirt. And I wrote an article about our college coach. We used to sit there for hours and hours in our indoor facility doing just base, you know, reading balls in the dirt. And his idea was if a guy drops to his – don't even look at where the ball is going. Once you see him drop to his knee, how many guys do you see drop to their knees, block a ball, get up – if you break right when you see him drop to his knees. And if it's a line drive, you can get back. But if it's more – most of the time, it's going to be in the dirt and nobody's swinging. Break, because more times than not, you're going to get there standing up, because not a lot of catchers, if you're breaking right as you see him drop. And I think that the Boston Red Sox is the only major league team I've seen that actually does that. I mean, they're amazing at it. Guys get a ball in the dirt, they're advancing bases. Now, the difference is Molina picks these balls. I mean, it's like goes against what you're taught. Because I caught, you're not supposed to ever lift your glove. You're supposed to just no holes anywhere. But this guy picks a lot of these balls, so he could drop to his knees, and he's basically fielding it like a ground ball. You know?
Yep.
And so will that negate that? Will that prevent them? Do they go and say, I know we've been doing this up to this point. I say you still got to let them loose. Because more time than not, you're going to get that base. That's huge.
Those first three guys in Boston's lineup there, when you look at Ellsbury, Victorino, and Pedroia, are like maybe the three favorite players I have to watch play the game because of the stuff you just said. They do all the little things. And we had the discussion a few weeks ago where I said, you know, I think Cano is clearly a better player than Pedroia, but there's nothing not to like about any of those three guys. There's nothing, and they do all the little things that you just said on top of being supremely talented players. But then you look at the Cardinals, they do everything right, too. And it's no surprise they're in the World Series. Both teams do everything right.
Right.
And it's impressive. It just is.
And, you know, everybody wants to talk about, you know, everybody wants to talk about the bullpen of the Cardinals, but it's almost like people are taking the Red Sox bullpen for granted. Forget Uehara has been unbelievable, but and I'm not just saying this because he's a Fairfield County guy, but Craig Breslow has been insane in these playoffs.
Who cares that we own him?
Yeah, who cares? I mean, Neil, I mean, I'm sure you know I own the guy. I mean, I faced him in Legion Ball with 2-for-3 against him with a double, but how could you pitch to me, Craig Breslow? But, you know, so, I mean, they've got a nice little bullpen in themselves, and Craig Breslow can get an inning plus. Uehara has given you 5-out saves, so if they could shorten the game with just those two guys, and the way the World Series works with all these off days, you don't got to worry about burning through a bunch of guys. There's going to be guys that are going to just sit there twiddling their thumbs in there. So what do you think about that, Neil? I mean, a lot's being made of all the flamethrowers in the bullpen for the Cardinals. Do you think that's a huge advantage over the Red Sox, or do you think the Red Sox bullpen is the same?
I don't see it being a determining factor, but I want to point out before – I want to sidetrack the conversation, but I want to point out that Michael DePalma's swing is looping. There are a lot of holes in it, and I think if you can get up in his inside space, his kitchen, that you have a pretty good, decent shot at getting him out. Getting back to the Red Sox bullpen, you know, you look at it, how they've stepped up over the series. A lot of people saw that as a weakness, you know, coming in, and the fact that, you know, there's that there's some doubt, and I think they proved the doubters wrong. I don't think there's anything to be worried about if you're a Red Sox fan when it comes to the bullpen.
Wow.
There's a lot there.
You took a shot
at my swing, which was hard to hear. Not a lot of people tell me the truth. You know, I got a lot of – I surround myself by yes men. I surround myself to talk about how great my hair is and how great my swing is, Neil. So I needed that. It's like a splash of cold water in my face. Stand up there like that. But so who you got? I mean, going in, I looked at the lines today. I mean, who would you say the Vegas – and it's a pretty significant favorite.
Boston.
The Cardinals are 2-to-1 favorites on Bovada today to win the series.
How?
It was it was plus 200 for the Red Sox. I mean, to me, I would have said – there was a lot of things going into it. Obviously, something we haven't talked about is the whole Boston Marathon tragedy that happened and how they rallied around it with the beards. And, you know, the Poppy speech, which still gives you chills. The most powerful F-bomb ever dropped in the history of America was dropped in that press conference. And then followed up by the FCC tweeting out, like, we're going to look the other way on this one. We'll give him a break. Like, actually acknowledging that he swore and not caring. And it was like, it's hard for me. Not that I'm a Red Sox fan. Not that I'm not a Red Sox hater. I'm not a Cardinals hater. But I'm rooting for the Red Sox. And you know, as much as you know, you could look at like how much those things really matter. You know, everybody wants to put a lot more into those Cinderella type stories, meaningful stories. I think having home field advantage and having that behind you, I think does make a difference. I think that gives them a huge advantage in their four home games. So I'm taking the Red Sox. I'm in the same boat. I was surprised to see it. I'll show you it on the Bovada website. Neil, who do you got in this series, and how many games?
Sox, and it's going to be close to a sweep. I think the Cardinals are going to have to pull out all the stops to avoid the sweep. It'll be five games, Sox in five.
Wow. What are you thinking, Danny?
I like the Cardinals in six.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, the thing about the Cardinals is, you know, they've got a great staff, but you've got Wainwright. You're not getting wins out of Wainwright, and like I said, right, like you mentioned, they're down 3-0 right now. You know, you've got Kelly, you've got Lynn. You know, you've got guys, and then, you know, Miller's in the pen. You got Waka, who they're all young guys, somewhat unproven. I mean, how long can Waka keep up these amazing starts? I mean, he's good. He's got electric stuff, 95-plus fastball all the time, filthy changeup, not really a breaking ball to speak of, but he doesn't need it. How many times can a rookie come in the postseason? We've seen it. You remember, like, David Brace's run,
yeah.
Even Matt Moore when he jumped in the league a couple years ago, who had some great, you know, games, but can he continue to just throw up zeros every time he pitches?
I can answer that question.
Go ahead, answer it.
How long can he?
They're not playing the Cubs.
How long can he keep it up as a Cubs fan? You want to tell you? About 15 years. I'm being honest. I mean, everything they do turns the gold, it seems. And I can see the score right now. It's 3-0 in Boston. I still think the Cardinals win the series. Maybe now it throws a wrench into my six games.
Yeah, right.
It looks like they're going to.
Well, whatever. You got to assume they're going to lose the game at home anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to lose the game in Boston.
I just can't see the Cardinals not upsetting. That's what it comes down to. I can't see the Cardinals not breaking my stones.
Not just destroying your life. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm excited about this World Series. I'd be curious. I mean, everybody wants to talk about, you know, ratings and all that. If you're a baseball fan and you're not into this series, and we talk about the little things, and you talk about, you know, where the Red Sox were the last 2 years, 2 years ago with the chicken and beer in the bank, and then last year with Bobby V and just the mess that they were, to come in and be the team that just does, you know, the little thing, in addition to having guys like John Gomes and Napoli that hit these home runs, you don't see a lot of mixes of that. They've got the big boppers, the hired guns who come in and just look for a mistake.
Right.
And then you've got the guys that can get an extra base and all that. And then, you know, they've got the good bullpen. I like their 1-4 on a whole better than I like. I mean, Wainwright's the best starting pitcher in the series. But I like 1-4. I actually like the Red Sox better. As horrible as PV inexplicably is in the playoffs, he's getting ERA over 10 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Have you seen that stat?
Yeah.
I mean, Jake PV over the last 10 years, one of the best regular season pitchers out there.
You know, because we've talked about it on air, off air. There's nothing I love more than teams that are just filthy at the end of the night, dirty, sliding around, playing as hard as they can. And there's the two best ones playing in the World Series.
Yeah.
So being a Cardinal hater. And I'm indifferent towards Boston. It's great. It goes to prove my point that we've argued about the Yasiel Puig of the world. These are the teams that get to the World Series. Talented, of course.
Well, I put that on Facebook.
Yeah, I did.
Because he made some bonehead throws in that one inning there. I don't agree with that whole altogether because, you know, Manny Ramirez got some World Series rings.
No,
nobody could have played the game stupid.
I'm not saying that's why they're there. I'm just saying it's nice to see them there. I'm just saying that's, to me, the way you should play the game, with the exception of Poppy, who hits a 4-3 ground out and doesn't run it out. Everybody else on both teams runs through, touches the bag, slides around, plays hard. And you know I like that.
I prefer it.
Yeah.
But I don't hate the other way.
I know, which is why I don't like it.
You're on an island here.
Yeah.
You know, like you and Tony D will just go and go to Zach Brown Band.
Just a couple of Bills fans hanging out. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. Neil, you haven't been on the show, but all Dan does is bet on the Bills in our picks, and he just consistently wins. And it makes me so angry because I said last week, I'm the guy who looks at the roulette wheel and says, red has come up 10 times. It's black's got a hit. I bet against the Bills every single week, and every week they either cover or win outright, and it just makes me so angry. I'm going to give you a little teaser. I'm betting against the Bills again this week. All right, we're going to take a call now. We're going to transition back to some college basketball. We had Tariq Turner on, which is fantastic. We got a caller in now who I think is going to give a lot of insight as to the landscape of college basketball. He was one of the best guards we mentioned earlier in the show in the last 10 or so years in the nation, college basketball-wise. Now he's come back to be an assistant coach for the Duke Blue Devils. We're going to go out to John Shire on line two. John, you're on the Tucci Lumber Hotline. Are you with us? John, are you with us? We got a little technical difficulties there with John Shire, but hopefully we'll straighten those out a little bit. But in the meantime, we'll get back to our conversation about, you know, the little things in baseball and how much we like that. And with, I'm just curious that you're just like so – there's a line in the sand and you're either with me or you're against me. I'm a guy who believes in all that. I told you, I'm passionate about little things in baseball. And I think there's a little bit of like I always ran out ground balls, not because in my mind I thought it was the right thing to do. It's because I never wanted to get out. So even when I got out in an air, it was like an egocentric thing to do. Like, I'm not going to make it out and hurt my team. I'm going to run because if I got out in an air, I don't care about the stats of it. I'm on first base. Maybe I could steal a base. Maybe I could score a run and do that. So it wasn't that I had this, like, a great appreciation for the game of baseball. It was that I just didn't want to make an out. So I think we come at it from different angles. I mean, when you play, I know you played the game very hard. Was the reason why because you had this big respect for the guys that came before you, or because you know you work so hard you only get 4 or 5 at bats a game? I don't ever want to be sitting on the bench. I'd rather be out in the baseball. That's the only reason I hustled.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for me, it started when I was a kid. And I remember a speech that my dad gave to my little league team, and he told the guys that not everybody on the team has the same ability level. Not everybody's going to go as far on baseball as the guy next to them. But what you can do is wear your uniform properly, have the stuff tucked in. Play.
You don't like the flat brims?
No.
You don't like the pokey reaches?
No. And I don't like the cuffed pants, and I don't like any of that.
I like high stirrups like you do.
Yeah. And my dad always said, put your uniform on right and play as hard as you can, because even if you're not good, you can still look good out there. You can still play the game the right way. So even through high school and into college and whatever else, I just played the game one way. Which was whether I'm 0-for-3 or I'm 3-for-3. The next at bat, if I hit a one hopper to the pitcher, I'm running through the bag. I'm running through the bag as hard as I can.
Yeah.
Because you look awful. You stunk. So you hit the ball back to the pitcher. At least the people in the stands go, boy, look at them hustle though. And it's not so that you're showboating. You're showing somebody up like Pete Rose running the first on a walk. All I'm saying is, you hit the ground out. You stunk. Your at bat stunk. Run through the bag as hard as you can so people go, see, there he is. Because you never know who's watching.
See,
these guys are already really good, so they don't have to worry about who's watching. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I hit the right way.
I agree to the extent. The reason I hustle those out is, what if this guy bobbles the ball? And I don't ever want to, like, how many times have you been playing, you know, hardball in college or something like that? Guy hit the ground ball, and the short, and he's not running out. The shortstop bobbles it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, give this guy a run. I never want to be that guy. So it was more like, not some guy in the stands. It's like, I never want my coach to say, you know, you could have been on first base and helped the team out. It was more like that. I'm a goody-goody. Neil, what about you? I mean, what are your thoughts about the guys playing the game the right way? Are you a guy who hates the Yasiel Puig? I know you don't, but are you a guy that, like, you know, gets super frustrated when you see that kind of stuff, or are you just accepting that some people are like that?
I mean, you know, there are times when I watch Carl Kleinies, and he's hustling down the line, and I think, you know, That's impressive to me. That's something that I can admire and recognize as, you know, but it, you know, I don't know. I'd rather have that than see a guy not run something out. You know, there's a special place in my heart for someone that is giving 110% all the time, no matter what. And, you know, it actually makes me feel bad because it says to me that, you know, that I need to give more out of myself. So, I have no problem with guys that are full tilt all the way. I mean, they might get a ball in their ear hole next time up at bat because I got feelings and I don't want them hurt. But as long as they're on my team, no problems.
Yeah, I will say this, and not to like take over the conversation, but this is God's honest truth. When I was in college, so as a freshman, we had fall ball. And I'm playing left field in a game, regular fall ball game. And there was a routine ground, like a double play ball type ball. And guy didn't get the guy bobbled it. So the guy running the second, they didn't make a play at second base, throws it over to first base. And the guy rounded second, comes over to third. So obviously playing left field, I'm backing up third base. And the first baseman throws the ball away, and I backed it up. Seems to me like nothing, no big deal. Literally like a month and a half later, you're in your post like fall ball games and you know meetings with the coach and you're going through the thing. And that stuck in his head to the point where that's why I made varsity as a freshman, he said.
Yeah.
Because we got a lot of guys who hit the ball. Because I've never seen a freshman do that and play hard. And to me, I'm just like, well, I don't know. I just figured I got to be doing something. And it wasn't like to prove anything. I was just like, I got to roll here, you know. And that's the type of thing that I know you appreciate. We appreciate. You'd love to see that, but you won't see a lot of that.
You know what I think? I think on some existential level, you're right with me. And I'm not being funny. I think you might do it for different reasons, but you're supposed to be where you're supposed to be, and you were there. You didn't need anybody to tell you. You just hustled and did the right thing.
I'm trying to do something. All right. Well, we're gonna We're going to transition back over to college basketball now. I think we do have we have our next guest on the line, and we don't really need to preface it too much. I mean, anybody who follows college basketball knows this guy, one of the better guards in the last 10 years in the nation collegiately. Now he's an assistant coach with the Duke Blue Devils. So joining us on the Tucci Lumber Hotline, John Shire. John, are you with us?
I'm with you guys. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate you taking some time on a Wednesday night to call me. So, my first question is, we had Tariq Turner on earlier, who's doing some Big East coverage for SNY and Fox Sports 1. And he was a guy, former collegiate athlete, who took the path of getting into broadcasting. You're a guy, still playing. I know you're just playing recently over in Israel. But what made your career path go into the coaching side of things as opposed to getting into the broadcasting side of things?
Yeah, I think for me, I love aspects of being on a team. That's something I've always loved. And the last couple of years, my first year out, I had an eye injury that set me back a little bit. Since then, I played in Israel on a team in Spain. And so for me, the chance to get back, first of all, to any team is a great opportunity. In college basketball, it's something I've always loved watching growing up. But then on top of it, to be back at Duke, with Coach K and, place where I played college, it doesn't get any better for me. Coming back here to coach and be able to help our players and affect them every day.
See, John, I think it's a hard thing to do. I mean, when my playing career was over, I tried coaching for a year and I couldn't stand it because I missed playing so much that it was hard for me to sit there and watch kids play and not be able to be out there. So are you getting any of that now? I mean, is it something that's a little difficult for you to just be a coach and not be out on the court, or is that something now you're able to just coach? I mean, you either have that passion or you don't. Are you finding that you have that passion to coach?
Yeah, no, I do have that passion. I remember when I was young, I would be drawing up plays and, making my own teams and just strategizing in my head. I'd have a notebook and just, fantasizing about, coaching and having a team. So for me, it's something I've always wanted to do. Now, with that said, of course I miss playing at some point. I think that's normal. I wouldn't be human if that wasn't the case. So, for me, that's I think that'll go less and less. But I think there's nothing like playing. I think for the rest of my career, if I end up coaching for the rest of my life, I think there's nothing like playing. But I love what I'm doing. I'm excited to start with Duke.
John, this is Dan Santarella here. And just for the sake of full disclosure, I'm not a Duke fan, but I've watched probably 90% of the games you guys play because I respect the hell out of how you guys do everything. And I'm just curious, when I watch the games and Coach K has just everything, every I's dotted, every T's crossed, I mean, is it just comprehensive practices? What is it that he does that makes him the best coach maybe in the history of the game?
I think for me, Coach is great at X's and O's and all those things. He's great with all that. But for me, he separates himself with, he gets the most out of his players. I think, when you play for him, you want to do right by him. You want to give it everything you have. And his motivational tactics and his way of, building a team together. I think, you see that with Team USA, but also with his Duke teams in the past. The team building and the way we come together as a team, I think he's special. And I think you either have it or you don't with Coach K's quality. I think it's just unbelievable, the way he's able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're from Illinois, obviously. How do you not just head down
right.
the road to Lawrence, where I could have rooted for you for 4 years, and you would have been an All-American
right.
and everything else you did at Duke, and I could have watched it and cheered for you?
That's
I mean,
right.
was it – did you just realize Coach K was that much better than Coach Self? What was it?
No, I don't think it's that. For me, it was – I think it's all about the opportunity and the right time, and I think – I knew where I was at in my life and, Coach K and the team that we had and the opportunity I had, I saw a vision there. And it wasn't anything to do with it wasn't a good situation anywhere else. It was more how great of a situation it was going to be at Duke. And, it worked out well for me. We took our bumps early in my career, but ending up your last game winning a national championship, very few people can say that. So I feel very lucky that I'm one of those people.
How nervous were you guys when that shot was on its way, in the Butler game there? How nervous were you with that half-court shot?
I felt pretty good about it. It was a half-court shot. Now, with that said, when it was coming close to hitting the basket, I thought it was going to be close, but never did I think it was going in. I mean, not that I'm a psychic or anything, but I just didn't feel that way. But it was close, no doubt. It was very close.
How do you guys look this year? I know you return Cook and Harrison and Suleiman and Thornton, who hit that big shot against my Jayhawks and Maui last year and everything else. But you guys look like you're loaded for bear this year. How's the team look?
Yeah, you know, we look good. We're a young team, so, you know, nothing replaces the experience. But we have a chance. You know, we have some special guys, you know, with Rodney Hood transferring in and Jabari Parker as a freshman. And then we have, you know, guys coming back who have been through it before. So, you know, we're not the biggest team, but, you know, 1 through 5, we have a very athletic team. So we want to get up and down, pressure the ball. And, you know, now that team just, you know, walk it up against us. I think it'll kind of be like a Duke team of the past, you know, when, you know, we had, you know, Duhon and, you know, Jason Williams to pressure the ball. We have those guys. We have a lot of guys to do that. So I think it'll be a very fun style that we play this year. And, you know, we'll keep working hard and think we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, you know, we were talking earlier about Andrew Wiggins out of Kansas. And I know Jabari Parker was a big recruit for you guys. I know he was looking at Kansas also, and then he obviously signed with you. There's a lot of talk about him being like a one-and-done player, which I know no coach likes, but I know Coach K has been outspoken about that kind of thing. How have you seen him in practice as a freshman, as a big recruit? Is he looking like he's going to start, play big minutes?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's a special player. And, you know, I think for us, we'd rather have Jabari Parker for 1 year, you know, rather than 0 years. So for us, we feel very fortunate to have him. And he's a special player. He's a guy who can do a lot of different things. And, you know, for him, too, coming in with that hype, you know, he works his butt off, and he just wants to be a part of the team, which I think says a lot about him. And he's been really good so far.
Who's the big team this year that you guys look at in the ACC? I mean, I know you have the big rivalry with Carolina. I mean, is there anybody else in that league this year that maybe even the coaching staff's talking about as being, you know, an excellent team or maybe a surprise team?
Yeah, you know, we haven't even talked about that. For us, we're worrying about our own team right now. I think we know we feel good about where we're at, but we also know we have a long way to go. So, you know, we'll worry about the teams when we play, you know, when we play them during the year. But for right now, we're, you know, kind of focusing on our team.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the staff every year, I look at the bench, and it's just nonstop former players of Coach K. Is it just as much of a family atmosphere as it looks like? Because he seems to keep everything with just you guys that all played for him. And obviously, you guys are all great players with you and Capel and Wojciechowski and everybody else. Is it just that family atmosphere that it looks like from the outside looking in?
It is. And, you know, I think more than anything, though, I think it says a lot about Coach K, you know, that a guy, you know, all of us had different experiences at Duke, but, you know, all four of us want to come back in, you know, different facets. So, you know, with Nate James and Jeff Capel and Steve Wojciechowski and, you know, myself now having an opportunity to come back. So I think it says a lot about him and how his players look at him and care about him.
John, this is Mike DePalma again. I got one last question for you, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this because a lot of people said if you have him on, you got to ask this question. I got to ask you about the legendary story of you scoring 21 points in 75 seconds in high school. Is that a true story? I mean, how is that physically possible? Were they have people on the court? Or, I mean, I don't think I could score 21 points right now on a playground in 75 seconds. How did that happen?
Yeah, you know, I just, you know, for me, I remember I always grew up just dreaming about having records, not individual records, but team records. I always want to have the best team. And we had a 35-game winning streak going into that game, and I just wanted to win so bad, and we were down by 13. And this came up a couple of weeks ago, because Jabari told me he was at the game. He saw me play that game, which is pretty funny. So he was talking about it, and we just, you know, reminiscing. And for me, it was just, you know, I would hit a three, and we foul, and a three, and foul. I was just trying to win the game. And unfortunately, we ended up losing somehow. We cut it to 2-3 times. But it was a good memory looking back, but it's also one of the worst memories because it was a hurtful loss for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. But that's one of those things, as a fan, you're watching the game like, you know, it could happen if we keep hitting these threes and taking fouls and keep hitting these threes. It could happen, and it never happens. And you actually did it, man. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. Well, John, I mean, we wish you the best of luck. I'm a UConn fan, so I'm with Dan. I'm not exactly the biggest Duke guy, but obviously we respect the hell out of what you guys do. And, I mean, Coach K is the best there was. So we really I'm glad that you're doing well there. And we wish you the best of luck. And, you know, don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you on again, okay?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot. I won't hold that against you,
right?
Your, you know, other fans. Oh, good. Thank you.
right, thank you. All right, well, that's John Shire. That's a great call, man. I mean, the guy was at his height was the best player in college basketball at some point, especially from the guard position at his time. He was a McDonald's All-American in high school. Guy dropped 21 points. Just let that settle in. 75 seconds. Guy dropped 21 points.
Yeah.
In high school. That's insane.
I didn't do that much.
And he's playing against a team that's beating him, so it's not like they're just playing against, the school.
Yeah.
He's playing against a real team that's like a good team, and he's just dropping threes from wherever.
He would have looked so good at Allen Fieldhouse.
You would have loved him. If he was down here, you would have had him off for 2 hours. You would have had him off for 2 hours.
Very frustrating. I'm not going to lie about it. It's very upsetting.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to get, finally, we haven't had one in a couple weeks, some Dude, Are You Serious. Maybe we'll sneak in some hockey talk and we'll get to our picks. We are the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be right back.
Cedar Point Concepts specializes in the development, management, and hosting of small business and personal web systems. We believe that a professional and functional website should also be affordable. Our hands-on approach keeps you in the loop as we offer you as much control over your site to suit your needs. Don't let the cost or fear of computers keep you from starting your own internet business. Through the use of open source software and popular web applications, we are able to offer you a clean, professional, and easy-to-use site at an affordable price. Whether you're looking for a single-page information site or a complete user system, we have a solution for you. CedarPointConcepts.com.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. We're going to get into some bonus time in a little bit. So if you're listening live, we've got about 20 minutes of live time left, and we'll get into some bonus time when we get to our picks. But, Neil, what'd you think of that interview with John Shire? I mean, that guy's a big-time player. Was there anything we asked that we didn't ask, you wanted us to ask? Duke-related, maybe?
Did he ever have an altercation with one of the Cameron crazies?
Yeah, that would have been a good call. I could get that.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, even if you respect Duke's game, you have to be annoyed with the Cameron crazy.
I hate everything about them. The only thing I like about Duke now is John Shire.
I love John Shire because he was so nice to us.
I'm a big fan now.
Yeah, we love John Shire. This show is brought to you by John Shire. All right, listen, Neil, we haven't had it in a couple weeks due to you serious because you were on your hunger strike, so the Giants got their win. You probably had some night. You probably went to a nice, like, Carl's Jr., whatever you guys eat in Jersey, I don't know. You probably had Papa John's. I know you're a big Papa John's fan.
Yeah.
Well, you probably had a nice meal, celebratory meal. Now you're ready. You got a full little belly. What do you got for us for Due to You Serious, pal?
Well, you're talking about McDonald's All-Americans. I actually feasted on McDonald's late Saturday night when I was a block away from my office, my workplace, and couldn't find my way home. That's what kind of state I was in on Saturday night.
Yeah, there you go. You just ate yourself at the drink. You probably didn't have a cocktail. You just had so many Big Macs, you didn't know where you were on Earth.
We'll start off with we'll play the race card. Why not? It was announced today that Kevin Love is the player who makes the most of his limited natural ability, quote unquote, from an NBA GM survey. And Kevin Love responded with, oh, yeah, it's the white guy award. I don't know if you guys had a chance to take a look at the survey, but the question is, which player makes the most of his limited natural ability? Those were the exact words. The candidates were J.J. Barrera from Minnesota, Matt Bonner from San Antonio, Jared Dudley from L.A., Clippers, Mark Gasol from Memphis, and Kevin Love from Minnesota.
Yeah, that is – I mean, we talked about it when Cam Newton was coming to the league. And everybody had to compare him to another black quarterback.
Yeah.
And I was like, to me, he looks like Ben Roethlisberger. He's big.
Yeah.
He's athletic. He's a faster guy, but he's not a Mike Vick. You know, he's fast, but he's not like, once he gets a full head of steam, he's fast. He's not super dodgy. You know what I mean? Like, and that's who I compared him to. And I think it's the same thing that happens. Anytime there's a good white basketball player, Keith Van Horn has to be compared to Larry Bird because they're both tall and white and can shoot a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it is, and it's a shame, and I'm glad that Kevin Love called him out on it, because Kevin Love is a hell of an athlete.
Yeah.
The idea that you're a double-double machine, the best passing big man
since Wes Unseld
in a long time. Yeah. I mean, you're going to drop a Wes Unseld reference.
Absolutely.
Yeah, have it. I mean, he's one of the best, I mean, outlet passes, the best there is in the business.
The only
guy, you're going to say that he's just not athletic? Like, that's what does that even mean?
The only guy on that list who stood out to me in terms of being a guy who really maybe you could say is an uncoordinated NBA player was Matt Bonner. Yeah, in San Antonio. I mean, but then you look at a guy who, how many championships he won there because he's a bit player and whatever. But I think it's a stupid comment that they made because Love is clearly an elite player.
Yeah, an elite
why
athlete.
I don't get that.
Let me ask you this. I have not heard this as the first, but when you're listening to that, how's Nate Robinson on that list? The guy's 5'6".
Yeah.
That's not limited. I mean, the guy's 5'6" playing in the NBA, and he's dropping 20, 25 points in big games. And he doesn't make that list?
I remember when the Vikes had that great team in 98, and all they commented on was how athletic Cunningham was. And I think that in this day and age, that's such an unfortunate comment to make that everybody who's an African-American has to be athletic,
yeah.
And the white guys are smart and dodgy mm-hmm. or whatever, because Cunningham that year played some of the smartest football I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He played some of the smartest football in my life. Derrick Rose might be the smartest player in the league with some of the decisions he makes, but it has to be look how athletic he is.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So I think it's ridiculous to say that about a black guy, and I think it's ridiculous to say this about Kevin Love, because he's one of the best players in the league.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if he's white, black, Puerto Rican. I mean, Italian, makes no difference. He's an elite talent. I don't know why you make that comment.
There's not a team in the league that wouldn't say we'd love to have that guy. That's not like he's in some sort of system. I mean, this guy, when he was at UCLA, was great at the things we're talking about. I mean, I mean, that's just an insane thing. And I'm so glad he called me out. I follow him on Twitter. He's actually very funny. He did a lot of, he tweeted a lot when he was at the Olympics, and he did a lot of funny stuff. So he's a good dude.
Yeah.
So I love that he just called it out. It's a joke of a survey, and it's a joke of the nominees.
Yeah.
How's Nate Robinson get 5'6"? He doesn't make that list? He's not limited? Go ahead, Neil. Now you've got us angry. Go ahead. Thanks.
Well, two things. Matt Bonner has one of the most Del Grosso shots I've ever seen in league history. And two, Kevin Love has a career after basketball is long and gone. You know, I don't know if you got a chance to check out his latest SportsCenter commercial, but the double-double that he serves up, I mean, that's gold.
It is gold. You have an ugly shot. How about Sean Marion's shot?
Awful.
Sean Marion looks like a guy who's never played basketball. You've been to, like, a court, and you're like, you saw him just like, let's shoot for teams. You saw him shoot, he would be the last pick.
Yeah.
You want to talk about limited. If that's all, after all his years of practice, that's what he's mustered up, that jump shot?
Ronnie Brewer. Okay, he had a busted elbow when he was like 12 or something. So yeah. It hangs out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There are some ugly shots out there, and they want to pick on Kevin Love. God bless him.
Well,
sorry,
you want to talk about guys with limited natural ability. How about the one-armed basketball player who committed to Florida?
That dude is amazing. Have you seen his highlight reel? Michael Jordan tweeted it out and was like, got to watch this guy. And he committed to Florida. And you're wondering, you're like, this can't be real. And this guy, he's one-handed. He's got almost, probably like three-quarters of an arm and another full arm. But, like, he could shoot the lights out, which you would assume if you're that big. You either think he's going to be big and could just rebound, or he could just shoot the lights out. But he's got move. He was taking guys with a dribble and dunking. Like, how are you getting beat by him? It is one of those things where you're like, this can't be real.
Yeah.
But for a program like Florida to recruit him, that's real. This guy's got one hand.
Billy Donovan is one of my favorite coaches in the world. And if Billy Donovan is recruiting this kid, I would say it's not some circus.
It is not. It is not a gimmick.
Yeah.
This guy is for
he's got
real.
Two national championships, Billy Donovan.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly.
He's not
going
to give a scholarship to somebody who is some kind of clown or whatever.
Yeah, not like they don't need to put butts in the seats there.
No.
Yeah, I mean, they've got an established program. You watch this highlight reel. Somebody had tweeted it to us, and I think maybe Tony has it. I'll put it up on the site if it's not up on the site now. It's amazing to watch. It's amazing.
I see it.
And I don't know. The guy's probably like 6'5", 6'6", because he's dunking, just dropping threes from NBA range,
yeah.
And he's slashing people. It's amazing. It's a feel-good story. I like how you bring us down to the depths of, like, racial profiling,
yeah.
And now you've brought us back to like what sports is all about, Neil. So now you got to try to triumph that.
I'm going to bring it back down. Cal Ripken Jr.'s mom held up at gunpoint for the second time in 2 years. What's going on?
Is she still in Baltimore?
She's somewhere near Baltimore if that's happening.
Baltimore. We talked about, somebody had posted, was it you that posted the Jets fan, punching that girl, and I said, like, look, New York is the softest big city in the country. I put it somewhere between Portland and Seattle as far as tough guys. Baltimore is a tough, tough city. That's not a place – I've never been more scared in my life. There's not a place in New York City, any one of the five boroughs, I'd be more scared than walking down some of the places, like where they film, you know, The Wire in Baltimore. It's a scary place to be. So if she's still in Baltimore, that's on her. She's got to go out to Aberdeen, where Cal's from.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised they made it out alive. I had a couple of close shaves there, definitely, for sure. But, you know, I'm a stronger person for it now that I've been through it, and I think that I could roll through there now, and, you know, I got street cred. Maybe not.
Never. There were decisions I made when I was 19 where I would walk down Cold Spring Avenue. You couldn't pay me money. You couldn't. If ESPN said, you know what, you could take over Mike and Mike, but you have to spend two nights on Cold Spring Avenue, I would say, you know what, I got a nice podcast, I got a family, kids, I'm all set.
What do you think it's like for Mrs. Rifkin every time she looks at Billy? Do you think it's disappointing?
The guy's claim to fame is that it had an F word on his baseball card.
Yeah, I mean, but take a good look at him, and I'd love to be him. Don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking the guy. Anybody playing the big league a million times better than me. But imagine being Billy. Like, I don't have a brother, but if he was that much better than me, like Cal, and I had to look at my mother's just disappointed eyes every Christmas Eve,
yeah,
it's got to be sickening to you, doesn't it?
A little bit.
He's on MLB Network, and I listen to him, and I can't get the thought out of my head that he's not Cal Ripken. I just, you know, I can't do it. I don't know.
Hey, it happens. What else you got, Neil?
This is more straightforward news, but it's still, the first words out of my mouth when I saw this were, dude, are you serious? The San Francisco Giants giving Tim Lincecum $35 million. What?
I'm so glad you brought this up, because I started to work on an article about how Prince Fielder's performance in the playoffs is going to be the death of these long-term contracts. And the example I was going to use was how the Giants signed him after his Cy Young Award. They gave him 2 years, $32 million or whatever it was, $36 million. And it was high per year contract, but it was part of his deal. Like, he didn't want to go long term. He wanted it. He screwed himself. And I said, this guy screwed himself over. But that showed, like, the Giants got it right. They're like, we'll overpay you per year, but we're not going to give you long term. And they're like, finally, you know. And I'm like, well, I'm wondering what this guy's value was going to be in the market. And I was thinking, it's still a pitcher. You know, this guy's going to get 3 for $30, somewhere around there, $10 million, probably get a 3 years. When I heard that on the radio today, I was just floored. How is that guy deserving of a $17.5 million per contract right now, what he's doing? I mean, the guy, this wasn't a flash in the pan. He had a bad stretch. It wasn't Justin Verlander had a bad July. This guy had a bad two-year span, where I believe he was under 500. And they couldn't even use him. They couldn't even start him in the playoffs last year.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you're going to pay $17.5 million for a middle reliever?
Brian Sabian was the same guy who wouldn't go up like $1.5 million or $2 million a year to sign Sabathia, however many years ago that was. So when I saw it come across today, $17.5 million a year?
Yeah, 2 for $35 million.
To me, it's completely like
panic mode because they had such a bad follow.
I don't know. I mean,
that's not a Giants thing. It's just so out of the Giants.
I know. I was prone to thinking that they're like a well-run organization, and either they're not, and Sabian doesn't know what he's doing, or he knows something that we don't. Like, he knows Lincecum's arm's fine. I'm sure they have
to run a physical. Lincecum's got some pictures.
With naked animals or something. I don't know what he's doing, but to me, it was mind-blowing that they go $17.5 million on this guy who's had all the struggles you just talked about. I don't know. I don't get it.
I mean, Neil, what would you think? Like, even if, as a Met fan, and the Mets might need to add a guy. And he was actually a guy I was thinking of. Like, we can get Tim Lincecum cheap, and maybe he turns into, you know, a Liriano who can have a little renaissance. If the Mets sign Tim Lincecum for 2 years, $35 million, I would throw this laptop through another laptop so that I destroyed two laptops. That's how angry I would be.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we were coming, you know, after the Pujols signing and the Hamilton signing and seeing how A-Rod's contract played out, you know, I thought that we were coming to the end of an era where it was, you know, we were starting to see the effects of, you know, the Red Sox getting rid of the bulk of their contracts and ending up successful. But, you know, then the Dodgers come along and prove that, you know, big contracts can succeed. And then there's reports of the Dodgers wanted to offer Clayton Kershaw a $300 million contract, which is absurd. You know, it's the bloating continues, and I guess, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for it to stop, but it doesn't appear to be anytime soon. So.
Yeah, that's just an awful thing. That's a great dude to be serious. And I was wondering if we could get to that today. I was going to include it in my article. I was going to delete that portion I had. But I'm glad you brought it up and just cleared the air. I needed to get that off my chest. What else you got, Neil?
There's a Texas racetrack that offers a bacon beer milkshake.
Well, that sounds horrible,
really.
Can we just, I mean, Texas has been threatening to secede. Just let them go, dude.
I know.
I will still let the Longhorns in, like, to play some games.
Will we? I'll let the Aggies in. I don't want to.
I mean,
I'm tired of everything Texas.
I mean, I have family in Texas, and I love them to death. They're the friendliest people, but, boy, the people from Texas love being from Texas.
Yeah.
You got a guy who just comes up to Connecticut, like, to live. He insists that his name is Tex. Like,
mm-hmm.
He's Tex now, like, because
yeah.
He's from Texas. He's got to just represent. Like he came through some struggle. Yeah, I mean,
I'm entirely disappointed in that entire state.
I mean,
from El Paso to Galveston. Like, enough. Bacon beer.
They had a good story with the UTEP basketball team. Was it UTEP that won that?
Texas Western. You know, you have enough after a while.
Yeah, exactly.
I love bacon. I've loved beer for a long time. The two of them together might be the only thing worse than the state of Texas.
Well, there you have it. We don't have a lot of listeners from Texas, thank God.
Well, I mean, maybe the ingredients will sway your decision. It consists of 6 ounces of Rahr and Sons Ugly Pug Black Lager, 6 ounces of Blue Bell homemade vanilla ice cream, and 2 ounces of bacon-infused maple syrup. I mean, I got to be honest. I mean, when you keep drinking Bud Light after Bud Light, or maybe you've had too many of Mike DePalma's famous lemonades, maybe you gotta go with something like this just to kick the rut and get the shift gears a little bit.
I will tell you, can I tell you a true story? There's a bar in Norwalk which I love, BJ Ryan, right? Cool pub, and they have a drink that they like insist that you could have. It's called a bullshot. And I was like, what is this bullshot? It's like $10, right? This drink. And I'm like, what is it? It's not a shot. It's a full drink. And they're like, do you like Bloody Mary? And I'm like, yeah, I like Bloody Mary. You know, I'll take one of those. All right. But instead of, you know, having tomato juice and Tabasco and all that, it's vodka. The next ingredient is beef broth.
Mm. Of course.
Cold beef broth. And then all the garnishments of Tabasco and all that stuff. And that's what it is. And it is just brutal. And they're so proud of the beer shot. What did I say it was?
Bullshot.
Bullshot. They're so proud of the bullshot. And it's like plastered on their thing. I have the bullshot.
Put the wrong letter in there.
Exactly. They're one letter off. Disgusting. I mean, imagine just having, like dare, having just like cold, beef broth, and then just adding some vodka, Tabasco sauce, Worcestershire sauce.
Not even on a bender. And I'll be honest, I've had borscht before, Russian beet soup.
But when you drop $10 on it, you're drinking it. At that point, you've committed.
Depends on the bender.
Well, you're from Darien. $10 fell out of your shoe on the way in here.
Oh, boy.
What else you got, Dale?
Well, I got the perfect meal to eat with your bacon beer milkshake. It's the meatloaf cupcake from Comerica Park. It's a cupcake-shaped wad of meatloaf with mashed potato frosting extended with cheese and chives. If you're looking for a healthy meal, I might eat that for the rest of my life, both of those items. I don't see any reason why not to.
Meatloaf is the meal that I would eat if I'm on death row. That's how much I like meatloaf. I would put a good meatloaf over meatloaf and mashed potatoes over anything. So this sounds good. How you doll it up, make it look like a cupcake, wherever you want to get to the end, the end of the day, I'm still eating meatloaf and mashed potatoes. I'll take that to the face. Now, we only got about a minute left, so if you're listening live, you got to check the rest of us out on TriStateSportsGuys.com. Get your damn opinion on this meatloaf cupcake.
I don't even want to talk about the meatloaf. I have a question for you.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Why am I angrier and angry with Neil? Why?
You were angry when you got in here, into studio?
Yeah.
You're more angry now.
You know what? I've been in a good mood lately.
You have. Neil, on sunshine.
Neil is upsetting me just by bringing things like this up because I like what you just said. Simple stuff.
I love a couple slices of meatloaf, some mashed potatoes, a little corn.
I just want to go bare knuckle with Neil. Just see what happens. You know what I mean?
We put that on you.
Yeah, we'll go get a cup of coffee afterwards in the Danish. But, you know, I'm just – he's upsetting me on every level tonight. Sports shots at my Vikings to foods and beers with bacon in them and milkshake beers.
Can I
beers.
Just say, all I want
to – really upsetting.
All I want to be there for is not the fight. It's for the Danish afterwards. I want to oversee this Danish.
I'll put there in. I'll buy. We'll just have the scrap, and then I'll buy him a coffee and a Danish.
Coffee and a Danish. You guys are just both bloody lips.
Yeah, that's it.
And you just have a talk about, like, this needed to happen.
Yeah.
Neil, you have to accept it. We needed to bare knuckle fight.
Yeah. And the angrier he makes me, seriously, I'm not making this up, the more I like it. It's like he becomes more interesting to me. You know what I mean?
You're like Rihanna, dude.
He's a good kid, but he's very upsetting.
He's a good egg, but boy, yeah. He's got some demons.
These Giants win one game, and all of a sudden he becomes any young Giants. One-liners and milkshake beers and whatever else he wants to talk about tonight.
I accept the under one condition, that Danish has mashed potatoes, bacon, and milk, and ice cream, and meatloaf on it.
I'll have my bullshot in the corner, just videotaping the thing.
Yeah.
Your Danish with the meatloaf. Cupcake and Neil will muffle down the bacon milkshake.
I want to hit him so bad.
Oh, just catch him. One right, like in between the lip and the ear.
I don't like anyone from Johns Hopkins.
You don't?
No.
That's BS. We did a lot of good things for this world.
I never even.
What guy from Johns Hopkins cured AIDS a couple weeks ago?
Did he?
Yeah.
Was it Coach Babb? Because he's the only guy I like.
He was Chip Kelly's mentor, and he liked base running. All right, Neil, you got anything else?
Nah, that's it. Good.
That's a good way to end it, with a nice fight story.
I love him.
And some love for Coach Babb. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to give our picks. We'll figure out what our other segment is going to be during the break. We'll be right back with the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Hey, it's Shy Rosalyn, and I'm inviting you to visit my new shop, Pond's Edge Designs by Rosalyn Brunson. My motto is fun, funky, and affordable. Wearable art for men, women, and even home decor items. All handmade in the USA, every item one of a kind. Don't be shy. Stop by. PondsEdgeDesigns.net.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out, as always, on TriStateSportsGuys.com. Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys or @Tri-State_Sports. I will give a quick plug. I'm going to announce now, I think it's pretty set in stone. We're going to be having a live show at O'Neill's South Main Street in Norwalk on November the 13th. And it's good. It's for a good cause. The Norwalk 5th grade Pop Warner team is just putting together an unbelievable season. They're undefeated. They beat the number 2 and number 3 teams in the state by shutout. They've outscored their opponents like 240 to 30-something. They're a couple games away. They got one regular season game left. They've got a bye in the state. Then they got to play the state. If they win that game, they're going to play a team they've already beaten anyway, no matter who they play. Win that game, they got to win the regionals, and they go down to Orlando, play at Disney for the Nationals, and they got to raise about $25,000. So we at Tri-State Sports Guys want to raise some money for them, so we're going to have a live show down there. We're going to have a team down there. We're going to have a raffle. O'Neill's has been great. They're going to donate 10% of their take, both food and alcohol, that night during the show towards this fund, and we're going to do the best we can to get to that $25,000 because it's a good cause. So we're going to try to get a couple good guests. So if you're listening now, get your checkbooks out. We're going to post a link on the site once it's ready, PayPal account where you could donate some money to that. It's a really good cause. But we want to transition over to some football, Neil, and I'm going to let you just have the mic for a little bit to talk about the New York Football Giants. What I was surprised about, on a whole, not just you, you kind of echoed the feelings of the Giants fans, which surprised me because Giants fans are the most optimistic fans of all the New York sports teams, I feel like. Everything is roses. I mean, if the Giants are 0-5 and people are telling me they're going to make the playoffs. Giants are 0-6, they still have a shot, and Eli Manning's still a lead quarterback. They finally win a game, and everybody almost seems more angry after the win than they did after the loss that brought them to 0-6, Neil, and your article almost reflected that. You covered the couple losses leading up to it, kind of, you know, gave your opinion on it, made some your typical excuses for Eli, and then they win a game, and you just drop F-bombs left and right, and I'm just curious to see that, because it's just like, all of a sudden, just a 180 on you guys. What made Giants fans so upset? I think it has to do with ESPN's coverage of it and their little lead-in with Scotty Van Pelt bashing them and how this is a horrible game. I mean, they won a game against a team who had a pretty good defense. I don't know. Why were you so angry after that game?
I mean, the ESPN coverage and telecast definitely contributed to the whole situation. The fact that Mike Tirico was just, from start to finish, was being snarky. And this is a guy who, like, prides himself on being, like, Joe, you know, Vanilla, who doesn't want to offend anyone and is just, like, you know, basically your faceless, voiceless, spineless kind of don't want to tip anyone off kind of personality. And then he's going in and he's giving rim shots and cracking wise, and it's like, you know, he just set the tone for what would be a miserable night, no matter if you're a Vikings or a Giants fan. I mean, the fact of the matter remains that the Vikings gave the Giants plenty of opportunity to capitalize and basically handed them the game. I mean, there's a pick six that was dropped. There was the fumble return, the fumble on the punt, where a guy basically just fell on his face. Giants didn't even do anything to induce that fumble. And, you know, you had Josh Freeman, who had no right being out there in the, starting for them. I mean, I know Christian Ponder's had his woes, but, you know, the fact that you're throwing a guy out there who's been in camp for less than 2 weeks and hasn't had enough time to prepare, apparently they're now saying he has a concussion or he had a concussion at some point in the game. And, you know, Hakeem Nicks dropping balls, Victor Cruz dropping balls, Peyton Hillis is the key to the victory. I mean, the dude was not even on a team for the first 6 weeks of the season. So if you compare the Vikings game to the Bears game, to a lesser extent the Eagles game, I almost feel like it's a tremendous step back for the Giants. And seeing that win, quote-unquote, the trade rumors were going nuts. And at least in my mind, I'm like, well, we got to get rid of Knicks. We got to get rid of these players. We got to start wheeling and dealing for picks, because there's nothing from that win that I took away and said, wow, confidence restored. This is it. This is the beginning of the run, because they had no right to win that game. I mean, they did everything they could to lose, and they did nothing to win. It was the Vikings just basically dookieing all over the bed.
Yeah, we are in the unique position of having two hosts on the show that are a Giants fan and a Vikings fan. I don't think there's a sports talk show in America that has that combination. So it's good to hear your opinion on that, and I want to hear Dan's opinion on it, because, you know, the Josh Freeman excuse that the guy – and I get all that. Having 12 days with that offensive system is not enough. But he was missing. Why? I mean, you either know how to hit a wide-open guy. I mean, the passing tree only has a certain amount of routes. Like, that's not, we're not talking about these deep outs that have the timing associated with them. There were wide open guys all over the field, and that's got to be alarming. So as you're watching that game, it was definitely a winnable game for the Vikings. And, you know, I took the Giants, but even as I'm watching this game, I'm like, the Vikings are still going to win this game, until it became obvious when they just started throwing the ball all the time that it's just never going to happen. How frustrating, as that game progressed, at what point did you realize and give up hope on that game?
Well, I mean, extremely early. I got a lot of texts from Giant fan friends before the game, and I told them, don't worry about a thing. You're going to win the game. I picked the Vikes on the show, really, just because they're my team. I had no confidence in that game. I thought Freeman would put up a representative type of performance. It was brutal. I didn't care. It wasn't even upsetting me, because they're as bad as they are. I can't look at Leslie Frazier anymore. I can't look at Bill Musgrave. I can't even look at the Well family that owns it. I just don't know how you get this off the rails as an organization from top to bottom. And I'll tell you one thing that I don't know how other Vikings fans feel, but I didn't even want to see Freeman taken out of the game.
No.
And I don't know how people feel about that, but I felt like that would be an injustice to Ponder at that point. It's like he's had his struggles, as Neil alluded to. He's a first-round pick, and they put the world on this kid's shoulders. And I looked at it like, you're going to bring him in now?
Yeah, it'd be like with the Jets and DeMar Sanchez.
I mean, to me, it was like, let Freeman dig his way out of it now.
Yeah.
What's the point? We're going nowhere, okay? Yeah, you're going nowhere. You got one win. You're going no place. It's on Freeman's shoulders. I know Ponder looked despondent on the sidelines, but it's like, leave him there.
Yeah.
I can't believe that if Freeman is cleared to play that he's going to start this week against Green Bay. But that's what they're doing. But it shouldn't surprise me, because the organization from top to bottom is in disarray, and it has been for the better part of, like, 5 years?
But what I'm saying, like, when we and I posted a quick thing on Facebook about, like, nobody would have saw this. If we looked at the preseason schedule, this game would be the worst Monday night game we're going to see all year.
Yeah.
And, of course, you're going to have people writing on the message board, well, I knew that the Vikings were going to be bad. How'd you know? They were 10-6 last year.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I didn't pick them to make the playoffs. I don't think anybody on here did. Nobody picked them to be as – I mean, that performance reminded me, and I was at the game last year where the Jets played the Cardinals, and John Skelton was quarterbacking, and he was missing, like, 5-yard stop patterns. Like, you know, just routes that, like, let's just get him into some rhythm. He couldn't even hit those. That's what was going on there. It just confused me that, you know, down a score in the late in the third quarter, they're not just giving the ball to Adrian Peterson. Like, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose because Adrian Peterson got 35 carries and didn't get us there.
Yeah.
Because it's not, he, you know, Freeman didn't show you anything. So that was, like you said, it's top down. Freeman was you know, the culmination of all the problems. But, I mean, why is he throwing the ball 50 times? And why, you know, when you saw in the first half, this guy wasn't really.
Yeah.
And that didn't just come about. It wasn't like this guy was having all these crisp practices, just throwing the ball all over the yard, and he came out there and just forgot how to throw an out pattern.
Yeah.
Forgot how to hit a guy in the seam. You know, and you could just see it, that game right there destroyed their season. That, I mean, you have no hope because you could see coming back to the huddle time and time again, wide receivers, tight end, you know, Rudolph coming down with his just head down like, God, this is just not fun to play football.
You know, I had a buddy of mine who's a Raiders fan say to me Tuesday that I'm just glad I'm not a Vikings fan. And I said to him,
is
I
it
go,
Osama?
No, oddly enough. And I go, what are you even talking about? They need a quarterback and they need coaches that know what the hell's going on. That's what they need. The offensive line isn't the worst offensive line you'll ever see. They have two good tight ends with Carlson and Rudolph. They got some decent wideouts, a defense that should be better than it is. But they need a quarterback and a coaching staff. That's what they need, and a better GM than Spielman. That's what they've needed for years now.
Yeah.
Okay. So for a Raiders fan, which is just upsetting to begin with,
yeah.
And my dad's a Raiders fan.
Yeah.
I don't dislike the Raiders. The Raiders need a million things, but for a Raiders fan to be able to look at me and say, boy, your team's terrible.
We got more pieces than them.
It's like they got more things in place than you do.
Yeah.
But they need two things, a coaching staff and a quarterback, and they don't have
which are the hardest things to get.
Absolutely, but what I'm saying is they do the Ponder thing, which I was stunned by because I watched him play at Florida State.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't want Adrian Peterson either after his knee injury coming out of Oklahoma, and he may be the best running back since, like, Emmitt Smith, okay? But I'm just saying, Ponder, I looked at it, I go, what did he ever do?
Yeah.
What did he ever do that showed you that this is the guy now to lead the Vikings into the future?
Yeah.
So to me, then to put him in for Freeman, I thought was a ridiculous statement that anybody would make. Let Freeman now. He built the crap fest that was that game. Let him dig his way out.
Yeah.
There were
that team that, like, lost a bunch of games, but you think, like, it gave you that, like, glimmer of hope. Like, the Vikings aren't that bad. You watch them, you're like, they could win some of these games. Early on, they lost a couple heartbreaking games. You know, they went over to London. You kind of throw that game away because it's weird that they went to London. Oh, they won in London.
Yeah,
but, like, but you throw that game away, that whole weird game. But, you know, it just – I don't know. I had some hope for them. I don't know how I could ever pick them again after seeing that.
No.
But we're going to get to our picks. We're going to leave the Jets the next week because the only thing I want to talk about the Jets is, you know, they went this season being like they're going to be a laughingstock. Whatever happens here on in, I mean, they're not going to be a laughingstock. Their defense is legit. Geno Smith has shown more than I think most people gave him credit for. Chris Ivory is a violent runner. You know who Chris Ivory reminds me of? And it's not like comparing him to some great running back. He reminds me of Marion Barber, where he just, like, when there's nothing there, he just says, I'm going to just run full speed into this line and get a yard. You know, like, he has that violence to his running game, which
is 34 carries?
34 carries, over 100 yards. And yeah, I mean, it is like, and so, and he was just a bulldog in that game. And, you know, I think that the Jets, the worst thing that's going to happen for them is D'Antonio Holmes coming off of IR or whatever he's on. You know, he's not on IR, but coming back because all that does is kill their team.
Yeah.
Let these guys go out there and play. But next week, we'll see. They play the Bengals. We'll get to our picks right now. We'll see whether we could start considering them for the playoffs because if you look at them right now, they're tied for that last wild card spot. And there's really one wild card spot to play for. And so we'll wait till the midway point to start really making those things. But the idea that we're actually discussing the Jets as a team that's going to be playing meaningful games in December, to me as a Jet fan, that's all you ask for. Give me some games after Thanksgiving that make me want to watch.
Right.
and going into this season, that's fantastic. So let's get into our picks, Danny. You got the spreads in front of you. You run them down. We're going to give it to you. Go ahead.
Let's change it up. We'll start with the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start with the Jets. The Jets are in Cincinnati, and the Jets are getting 6.5 points. You want me to go first since I'm
go ahead. You go first. I'll go last, Jared. We'll go to Neil after you.
I'm laying the wood with the Bengals. I'm laying the 6.5.
Is it the one good game, one bad game thing? Are you getting to that, like, routine? Or?
It's just the fact that I can see them winning by, like, 10 points. That's all it is. I'm not an expert on it. I don't, you know, I like Dalton. I like some of the things the Bengals have. I just, the Jets are inconsistent enough offensively that I look at it and go, I don't even know what I'm going to get.
Yeah.
So let me just take the Bengals, being that they're at home, laying less than a touch. If it was 7.5, 8, you would go, I don't know. But I'm going to lay the 6.5 with Cincy.
All right, Neil, who do you got in that game? 6.5 points, Cincy's laying. Who you got in Cincy?
I'm going to take the Jets to cover.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to – I don't think they're going to suffer from a hangover from this win over the Patriots. I think they're going to use that and build off of it and carry it over to this game. And who knows what kind of Andy Dalton you're going to get. You know, I mean, he's kind of been all over the map this year. I know he just came off a really good game last week, but he might be due for a 3-interception game. And, you know, I don't know that the Bengals have that consistent running game that can really – that can really take advantage of the Jets, and the Jets are really good against the run. They're pretty decent against the pass, and I think they're gonna cause fits for Andy Dalton, but not enough to get the win.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the Bengals, and they were a team I really liked going into this season. I think they've disappointed, even though they're in first place in their division. I think that Cincinnati is sort of a disappointing team, and I think it comes down to Andy Dalton. And I think that the Jets can do enough to disrupt Andy Dalton. I think that guy, you know, in the right setting is very, very good, but you've seen what he's done in the playoffs, which isn't much. And I think that Rex Ryan can put a scheme together and their defensive line can get in his face enough. And it's all going to really come down to Cromartie on A.J. Green. That's another coin flip. I mean, there's games when the guy looks like a premier cornerback in the league, and there's games where he looks like he's lost. And so I don't think they win this game either, but I also, you know, I like what Rex Ryan's done, and everybody wants to kill him, and I, you know, people made fun of me for my comments I made when Woody was on. I was like, got to bring him back, but, you know, that controversial play that ended the game last week, you know, it comes out now that Rex Ryan had seen that on film and alerted the refs to it, and it was a penalty. It's a BS rule and altogether, but Bill Belichick was trying to usurp the rule by having a down lineman go around the guy and push him, and he figured it out, and he alerted him to it, and that's just what makes this guy good. Like, he sees those type of things. The reason I don't think they can win that game, tight ends kill the Jets, absolutely kill the Jets. They can't cover tight ends in the middle of the field. It's amazing. You get Gronk back, you think they're going to just say, we're going to cover Gronk no matter what. This guy was just running wide open down the middle of the field in the seams, and they have two good tight ends. They got Gresham and Eifert. I think that's going to be the difference in the game. So I do think that the Bengals win, but I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it's going to be a 2017 game where the Jets can cover and not win. And at this point, when you're 4-3, you're not looking for moral victories anymore. You're looking for victories. It's not going to be enough. But I'm taking the Jets to cover here. What's the next game you got there, Danny?
Giants in Philly. Giants are getting 6 points. I'm back on the Giants bandwagon. I'm proud of them after beating my team. I'm going to take the 6 points in Philly against the defense. I think they may be able to move the ball a little bit against. Give me the Giants in the 6.
Yeah, I'm going to let you finish this one, Neil, because I'm going to take the Eagles here. I think that for a lot of the points that you made earlier about why the Giants shouldn't be so happy about that win, you have Vic coming back healthy. You know, the Eagles are an enigma in and of themselves, but I like the Eagles a lot in this game, and I think it's going to be one of those games where they can come out. You're not getting a pass rush on them, and they can get Vic can get the ball out of his hands into his playmakers. I think this could be a runaway type game for the Eagles. So, Neil, I'm curious to hear about your thoughts on them. This is if there's any glimmer of hope for the Giants, they got to win this game, and so you got to be hoping that they could pull it off. But what do you think, betting wise?
I mean, I'm on the fence on this one. Like, I can see it. You know, as I say in the article about my recap. Giants lost that first game at home on three consecutive drives where Eli throws a pick. You have one where he gets his head slapped, should have been a penalty, shouldn't have happened. You got another one where Nick stops his route, and you got another one where he throws a bad pass to Cruz. I think without those picks, that's saying a lot, Giants pull off the victory there. I don't know that they're going to correct a lot of what's wrong with them right now, especially with Nick's, who appears to be on another planet altogether. So, but then I see what Peyton Hillis is able to contribute, and I know you're laughing under your breath, but the guy played real hard. The guy was able to bail him out of some third and longs where Eli just dumps it off to him. He stumbles for a first down. He's got some fresh legs under him. Maybe they get Brandon Jacobs back. So maybe that 1-2 punch, they were able to run the ball and then thus take some pressure off of Eli. Maybe he makes some plays. That said, they don't cover. I'm taking the Eagles.
All right. What else you got there, Dini?
Minnesota, Sunday night at home, getting 10 from the Packers. I'm going to lay the 10 with the Pack. The Vikes are just, like I said before, complete disarray. Freeman's going to start if his concussion gets cleared. Ponder plays if he doesn't. They both stink. I can't see Rodgers not putting up a big game, a big stage, showing up my theme. I think the Packers win going away.
I'm with you, Danny. I think this, I mean, to me, it's going to have to be a unique game for me to take the Vikings. Just like I said, the body language, everything, even the coaches. You look at Leslie Frazier, and he's just like.
Can he talk on the headset?
He's so annoying. It's like he's listening to his iPod.
That was a visceral reaction right there.
Yeah.
He just, he upsets me.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I like the Packers a lot. If I still had them left in my knockout, I would love them, but I don't. But, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a joke of a game. I got Jordan Nelson on my fantasy team. I'm really hoping I don't care how many injuries they have in their receiving core. That's going to be a joke of a game. What do you got, Neil?
Green Bay all the way, and you might see Joe Webb at one point underneath center.
There you go.
I hope so. Let's go to my favorite team.
Oh, my God, you love them. Oh, you love the Buffalo Bills.
Three in a row with Buffalo. They're in New Orleans. They're getting 12.5. Mike, tell them where I'm going.
I got a hunch you're going Buffalo.
Buffalo.
No reason other than it's money in your pocket.
Bad Lewis. Thank you. Best quarterback in the
Duke. Where'd he go? Duke?
To
Duke.
Yeah.
He graduated with Shire, probably.
Probably.
He's every room together.
He's a
we should have asked him, how did we have John Shire on and not ask him about your favorite quarterback in the league?
I know.
That's on you. That's something you're going to have to sleep with.
You want to know something truthful, though?
Yeah.
I think Buffalo's going to get buried. I really do, but I'm taking them. I'm three in a row. I mean, and they've won two of them?
Yeah.
Buffalo beat Baltimore and Miami, right?
Yeah. I mean, knockout-wise,
yeah.
For me, it's been great. But, yeah, I like New Orleans big in this game.
That's too bad that you're wrong.
No. God, I think Marcus Colston has not had a great season. This is one of those games where he just has, a little dancing, he goes out and he has 140 yards receiving, a couple of scores, that type of game. They started to establish a running game a little bit in their last game, last couple games. So I think that New Orleans just buries them, absolutely buries them. What do you think, Neil?
I think that Buffalo is not only going to cover, they might win this game. I'm not saying they're going to win, but they might.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Let's get some money on the money line. I lost $50,000 last week on my Jacksonville bet, so I could use I could use a hit.
Put it on the Saints.
Yeah. All right. We got our we got one
more. You want to do my bonus pick?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go to the college gridiron.
Of course you are.
I'm taking Auburn.
State?
Auburn.
Oh.
Playing 24 at home at Jordan-Hare against Florida Atlantic. This is an Auburn team I like. They're underrated. No one's paying attention to them with one loss. They're ranked 21st, 2nd, whatever they are. And they're a team that I think at the end of the year, after Bama gets through LSU, they have LSU at home, they go there for the Iron Bowl. I think it's a team that could present some problems with the offense.
Is that right?
Under Gus Malzahn, and I know Timmy from Norwalk, our buddy, would be happy to hear me say that he runs a spread offense.
A lot more football than any of us.
Way more. He knows more than Coach Ireland.
Well, we know that.
It's unbelievable. I like Auburn in this game to the tune of like about 47-10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would lay the 24 with Auburn. That's my bonus pick of the week.
All right. I'm going to give you my bonus pick of the week. I like the pick of the NFL here. And I'm going to go in honor of my former co-host here. And this is just I got a hunch here. I like the Raiders at home getting the 3 points against the Steelers. People are starting to get kind of back on the Steelers bandwagon a little bit. I think they're a very flawed team, their offensive line. I think this is a game where McFadden kind of goes off. He has those games when he's healthy and he just puts up 150 all-purpose yard type game, a couple scores. The Raiders are one of those teams when they play at home, it's bizarre. I mean, they could beat good teams. I remember a big loss that the Jets had a few years ago, and it almost cost them their season in Mark Sanchez's rookie season when they went out there and lost. I like the Raiders, and it's just like one of those things that jumped off the page at me, and I said, you know what, I'll take the Raiders, getting points at home. I have a hunch they're going to go out and win that game outright, and it be one of those, like, you know, 34-21 type games for the Raiders. It's one of those games that kind of surprises some people. Neil, you got a bonus pick for us, brother?
I do. I'm going to go back to college with Santa Claus over there, and I'm looking at the Vanderbilt-Texas A&M game. A&M favored by 17 points. And
nobody gives Danny
football. Hurt his shoulder, his throwing shoulder last week. I think that's still going to affect him going into this game. Vanderbilt covers, and they might even win.
Neil, do you remember the last time you picked the college game? Do you remember that when the Terrapins took on the Seminoles? Do you remember that? And I told you you're wasting your money. Do you remember that game? It was 63-0, Neil. I like your pick, too, but now I'm not so sure. After I saw that Florida State-Maryland game, how can I trust you?
You've lost all credibility when it comes to college football, Nailers.
Well, I mean, I did call in. The last time I picked an A&M game, I did cover, so I'm good when it comes to the Aggies, I guess.
And a little backdoor cover. Have a BS touchdown with 15 seconds left. All right, great show. Thank you again to Tariq Turner. Check him out this Friday. He's got his little Big East kickoff show on Fox Sports 1. It'll be on from 9 to 11 o'clock. So check him out. He'll be out there on the scene. They're going to have representatives from every team in the Big East. So please check him out. He's a good dude. Support the guy. Follow him on Twitter. You can always follow us on Twitter at @tristate_sports. Like us. We are closing in on 700 likes on Facebook. I'd really like to get to 700 before our next show next week. So check us out on Facebook, which is facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, or, as always, on our website, TriStateSportsGuys.com. I'm Mike DePalma, Dan Santarella, Neil Lynch. Thanks for having you back. Hopefully we get Tony B in the studio if his flu clears up. Great show. I really appreciate your time, and check us out next week with TriState Sports Guys.